places.
Attention, attention. You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. Curious Realm is busy traveling the vast void of time and space to find the best paradigm-changing content the universe has to offer. Enjoy the following transmission, and remember, stay curious, curious, curious. Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our official coverage of the 2023 Falk Monster Festival. We are here in Falk, Arkansas, sponsoring the event as always. We have on with us in this segment the amazing Jeff Crypto Hulk Stewart. I almost said Craig Woolhe because I was just talking to him.
You know.
But he is known best for Man versus Bigfoot. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Jeff?
I am doing great. Always doing great anytime I'm at a conference.
I know.
And surrounded by so many talented and wonderful people and all the fans that come in and make you just feel so good about yourself because, you know, hey, my psychosis is validated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because I'm chasing crazy things through the woods and these people like me for it. So, you know.
It can kind of feel that way a little bit, especially once you go out and meet people in public. I've sponsored a lot of these events over the last year or so. MUFON Con, International Remote Viewing Association, like near-death studies groups, all kinds of things. But literally, the Bigfoot and cryptid community is so close, so tied together. It is literally like a large family. It is so interesting to see. And even the community of people that come and attend, seeing the story swaps with people like you, Chester Moore, everything else. It's so open. It's so beautiful. It's amazing.
Yeah. And one, you mentioned remote viewing.
Mm.
A funny thing that most people don't know about me is that I filmed a pilot for my own television show for Discovery about 7 or 8 years ago, and something happened that didn't fly.
Sure, sure.
But my partner on the show was none other than Colonel John B. Alexander.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
And I was not a believer in remote viewing. I was not a believer in any of that kind of stuff until I spent 9 days filming a pilot for a show with this man.
Yeah.
And out in the woods, no electronics other than what we could charge up with solar chargers and batteries and things that. So it was very limited on technology. And this man made me a believer in what he could do.
It's remarkable, man. It really is. It's probably amongst my show the most referenced concept because the people involved with it, Hal Puthoff, he's literally the laser scientist, laser physicist that wrote the paper that kind of progenerated this idea that scientists were affecting their own experiments without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just by strange ways that things communicate in the universe, you know, the whole butterfly effect. I sneeze here. There's a thunderstorm in China now because of the ripple effect. And yeah, the concept of non-locality, even right now, this year, the Nobel Prize in Physics went to non-locality, quantum entanglement.
Yeah.
And the fact that something over here can affect something on the complete opposite side of the globe. So it opens this whole new reality.
And what's funny is you look at this stuff and me going back to my childhood in the 70s and watching sci-fi shows that were on the cutting edge things, you know, Star Trek, you know, the original series was in syndication, and you're watching it as a kid, and all of these different shows that are coming along, these sci-fi shows, and all of this technology was so out there. All of this thinking was so out there because it was science fiction.
Yeah.
And now so many of those things that were science fiction then are science fact.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
I listen to, I do a lot of travel work, at least did for a long time, and one of my things at night was listening to old school radio dramas. Love radio drama. It's a great old format.
Me too.
Really is the birth of talk radio and what we do in podcasting, but in narrative form. And a lot of what I listened to was old sci-fi stuff from the 1940s, early 50s, and man, some of the things that they're talking about. There was one episode where they were literally talking about this computer that made all the decisions for humanity. And every bit of information in this computer was written on atoms inside the computer. And it's like, you're talking about quantum computing.
Quantum.
In like 1948.
Yes. Yes. In 1948.
Like this, and when you listen to the episode, like, it is a fully formed idea.
The jet engine was being developed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was, we had rudimentary jet propulsion.
Yeah, we were just beyond like,
you know,
get the propellers rolling.
Germany had like one, what was it, the Messerschmitts or something? They had like one jet, you know, and we didn't even have one yet.
Yeah.
So it was like, they're talking about quantum.
Yeah.
I mean, just all of this. And we're like in the caveman days as far as
mentality wise.
And it was evil. You know, some of this technology was thought of as evil. You know, hey, you know, we're going to open that Pandora's box and we're not going to be able to close the lid because we're going to do something. And then
it is one of those. Once you open the box, there's no reboxing it.
Yeah.
You're never going to see a reboxing video.
Just like
let's put it that way.
What we did is splitting the atom.
Yeah.
You know, we split the atom. Okay, we stopped World War II. But look what has happened since then.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, we've got nuclear power, and that's been, you know, okay. But it's like this trade-off. But, you know, now every evildoer in the world has access to. We watch all these shows.
It's just dirty material.
Yeah,
you can buy
some yellow cake plutonium on the dark web.
I could hop to Jersey right now and probably find some and get me a marble on marble rye.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason behind this, and even behind my show, is the fact that there is so much out there, Jeff. It's mind numbing. And even whenever you get into the world of cryptids, North American cryptids, specifically Bigfoot, Sasquatch, that kind of thing, it goes back so far. And there is so much. It's hard for literally the sieve of information not to get clogged by somebody.
Yeah.
Because of the volume of information out there. And some of it's really good information. Some of it's very not good information, but let's and you know, you kind of have to deal with that regardless, any kind of news. But even right now in the state of Texas, we're dealing with a cattle mutilation issue right up the road that it got to a point with the police where they went to social media and were like, anybody know anything about this, because they're up against a stump. Investigative wise, they don't really
know.
It's
so weird.
Yeah.
For the simple fact, Chester Moore and I touched on this a few days ago, talking about it and stuff. And we do investigative outdoor journalism together. And we've done the horse killings. There's been a rash of horse murders here in Texas, serial killings of horses. But there's many aspects of these animals that are being killed. And even if we take away the UFO.
Oh, yeah,
or
yeah.
UAP, whatever they're called now, phenomenon, even if you take that out, and which I hate to even take that out of the equation, but if you take that out and you say, okay, we're going to go flesh and blood. We're just going to go, you know, nothing transdimensional, no portals, no nothing going on. We're just going to go flesh and blood.
Yeah.
You really got something disturbing because, one, who's going out there in old Farmer Johnson's pasture and basically ritualistically slaughtering his cattle, and then they move 10 miles down the road and kill one, move 10 miles. And if you look at it, they've been doing this. This started out back in 2019 in Michigan.
Yeah.
There were a rash of literally hundreds of cattle all over the north up there, Michigan and Pennsylvania and stuff. And they were finding these cattle killed in this exact same way with genitalia removed.
Yeah.
Their udders removed in the cows, and a lot of their lips and things cut off.
The jowl area, tongue.
And you're like, okay, say it is somebody out there killing these. Well, what kind of an organization, what kind of group are they getting together to where these people are killing them all over the country?
This upcoming Tuesday, last Tuesday, we just had King Gerhard on. This is a pre-record, so I have to think in time here.
Right.
Last Tuesday, we had King Gerhard on talking about this, and that was one of the things that we brought up, was that we don't have to jump to the extreme. Extremes there, we know that, and hey, I love Linda Moulton Howe, dream guest.
Yeah.
And she's done she's literally the progenitor of that work.
Yeah.
And there's some amazing information there and some really wild stuff, but that's about a 2% of the cattle mutilations that lie in that realm.
And then you have to ask, in all honesty, these people fly millions of miles, you know, hundreds of light years, whatever, across a galaxy.
For a lingua taco?
Yeah, come from a totally different star system, blah, blah, blah. And what is the first thing they do? They get to Earth. Well, we're going to go get a cow.
Yeah.
And
what we need is some Rocky Mountain oysters today.
Yeah, I mean, we need some anus nachos.
Well, and
some cow anus nachos.
It's interesting because this is what Ken and I got into. When you look at many of the cattle mutilation cases, yes, it's parts that are considered delicacy meats in a lot of places. Lingua, tongue,
the sweetbreads, the udders.
Barbacoa.
Yeah.
You know, the sweetbreads, yes, they come from the udders, things like that. Once again, Rocky Mountain oysters, you're talking testicular material.
And in a lot of your Asian markets, the penis from a bull.
From a bull, absolutely.
They dry it, they grind it up, make a powder out of it, and it is medicinal.
Absolutely.
For erectile dysfunction.
Same thing with bull horn.
Like yeah.
Bull horn.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So there are a lot of things, just because we don't realize it in our little lives here in America.
Yeah.
You know, there are subcultures and there are other traditions and other places that have been brought over here.
Yeah.
Because the people moved here. They migrated here.
Yeah.
So there's still some of that Latin American culture that is into the different meats, the exotic meats, like the horse killings.
Sure.
That's one thing Chester and I touched on with the horse killings was there were horses.
Oh, yeah. Not eating horses, basically an American thing.
Yeah.
You go anywhere else in the world, it's meat. It's meat.
You go, I mean, Russia, it's really huge in Russia.
Yep.
Over in Asia, in certain places, it's big.
Yep,
in
Middle East.
The Middle East, it's really big in the Middle East. So it's kind of an American.
Yeah.
American. I remember I went hunting on a ranch, and they had zebras. And the guy was like, hey, you know, I want to kill a zebra. I'm like, no, I don't want to kill a zebra. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to eat it. And I'm the kind of person, I mean, I don't hunt things.
Yeah, I'm not hunting for a trophy.
Yeah, I don't hunt them just to shoot them. Don't do that. And he's like, well, stuff's delicious.
I'm not going to lie.
Baloney.
I'm like,
baloney. And he's like, no, man. He said, let me hook you up with some. And so we went back that evening to the ranch house, you know, and
zebra steak.
We had burgers on the grill, you know, a little mesquite smoke going on it. And he made these burgers. And I took a bite and I was like, oh my God. gosh, man, it's the best burger I've ever had. And he said, that's zebra.
That's zebra meat.
And I'm like, okay, put me down. I'm okay with it now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, once you get past the stigma
of
eating, because, you know, it's just a stigma. It's a cultural stigma.
And it's interesting because I'm Cajun.
Yeah.
And it's one of, there's an old joke. You know, you go to any zoo in the world, you'll see the name, kingdom, phylum, species of the animal. You go to Louisiana and you see the name and the recipe.
Exactly.
Hey, man, will it fit in my pot?
And see, that's the way
that's
was,
my question.
I was pretty much raised on the Texas-Louisiana line.
Yeah.
And so I was raised that way. I mean, we ate and talked. Everything.
There is a squirrel season in Mamou, Louisiana, where my family's from, and the children are off of school for it because they know they will be at camp.
Yeah.
Like, it's an ingrained part of the culture.
My teachers knew.
You hop over here to Texas and tell somebody you're going to go out squirrel hunting.
Well,
there may be a few over here in the thicket area in East Texas, you know, where the Cajuns migrated over, things like that. Arkansas, even, squirrel hunting is still big. But you get out to West Texas, Houston area, people look at you crazy.
You're not going to be at school tomorrow, are you?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, man, it's October the 1st. It's squirrel season, man.
Season's open.
I'm going to be out there, you know, I'm going to be squirrel hunting.
I'm going to be out there with my 410.
And I'd have teachers that would be like, well, you know, if your dad cooks up some of that good squirrel and gravy, you know, bring some to
bring
school.
Me some of that squirrel gravy if you've got some.
And so, so when I learned that the zebra was good, We got it.
Yeah.
So, you know, these animals that are being killed, some of them did have meat removed. Then you've got the ones that the skin was removed, but the meat wasn't disturbed.
The meat wasn't disturbed. And even once again, you know, people like, well, why would you just want the cheek? Why would you just want the tongue? Well, if that's what you're going for, yes, it would take a lot more time to pull out the beef ribs. Like, if you're talking
hours and hours to butcher the animal.
To properly butcher an animal.
And you could literally kill it and remove the organ meat that is just hanging off the body. The testicles, the penis, the sweetbreads, the cheek, tongue, things that were just right there, take 10 minutes with a sharp knife.
Yeah, to dress that down takes no time, because that's typically trash.
Yeah.
That's typically what you're throwing out.
But see, that's another thing that we covered was the fact that this meat is trash, basically, to us. And you can go to any butcher shop in East Texas.
Hop to Fiesta. You can buy whole lengua for like $10.
Walmart.
Yeah.
Walmart sells it.
Yeah.
Every local Walmart around the house sells tongue in a package, like $13.
Yeah.
And you can
vacuum
get
sealed.
Vacuum sealed. And most of your meat markets, you can go in there and say, hey, you know, how much for the sweetbreads and that? And I mean, for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
You can get these because they're going to throw them away anyway.
Right. They're scrap bucket material most of the time.
And so people can get those. So, you know, you really wonder, you know.
What was the motivation?
What is the motivation behind killing an animal that in the state of Texas? You can legally be shot and killed by Farmer Johnson.
Yep.
There's
three things.
If you're killing his animal, if he's out there and you are killing his livestock and stealing it or whatever, you can still be.
There's three things in Texas that you can still be legally shot for if you cross over a fence. Jacking with somebody's cows, jacking with their water, or hurting their horses.
Yes.
Because those are all work animals. Everything else, they are all part of your actual income. And like people do not realize
especially at night.
Farmer Johnson could literally just pop a shotgun out the window, pop you, and call the cops in the morning. He ain't even got to bother
calling them
right now.
And in Texas, the law really changes at nighttime when all these crimes are going. Because at night, you don't even really have to be jacking with somebody's cattle or something.
No, you just got to cross over a fence line.
You just be on their property doing something. I mean, most people aren't just shooting you because you stepped over the fence. But if you're out in the middle of somebody's pasture with a gun or some sort of a weapon, they're pretty much figuring you're not up to any good.
Well, especially if there have been incidents. There have been incidents in surrounding areas.
Yeah.
Everybody's on watch. Everybody's on point, you know, and even exploring the fact, like you were saying, that These are incidents that are similar across the country. And even looking at something along the lines of smiley face killers, stuff like that, things that are traded on the dark web, possibly, methods, modes, that kind of stuff. Even looking at this in that light, and this is something that King Gerhardt and I explored for just a couple minutes, was the idea of cultish practices, black magic practices, even especially when you're talking Santeria, voodoo, things like that. The tongue is a big part of a lot of that.
The tongue is a lot. And one of the things that you run into is there are so many people that can access this information now through the web.
Yeah.
That used to, you had to go check out books and read for hours and hours and hours, or know somebody and be taught, you know, through actual talking and practice and everything. Now, anybody with any kind of a notion can get on the web and look this up and can say, oh, this is a practice. This was an old Norse practice of blah, blah, blah. Or this was a practice of this obscure religion. And we've got so many people now that are practicing these obscure religions.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely.
And I'm all about freedom of religion. Don't get me wrong. I'm a very believe in individual rights.
Remove choice, you remove America.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. I'm all about, you know, individual rights and things. But at the same time, we have made it so easy for someone to feed their compulsion, to feed their addiction, and to feed their psychosis.
Yes.
In this country.
Yes.
By looking up things on the internet. And it doesn't even have to be true.
You can look
up things, and people have written entire manifestos.
Like I said, it's hard for the sieve.
Yes.
That's supposed to be filtering our information.
I've run into people,
get clogged.
I've run into people. I'm a very big fan of Norse mythology. And I've read a lot of books on things, you know, back when I was a kid and you had to read.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at how many people that I run into that claim that they are practicing the old Norse religion of, you know, worship Odin and Thor and all of these.
I don't know that you are unless you're practicing burnt sacrifice.
And I sit here and I
regular
talk to
ram's
them.
Blood.
And these people, I'm like, so you're practicing this? I mean, have you really read like factual literature?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the mythology of you know Marvel Studios kind of Thor stuff, but the actual mythology of this and how brutal that these practices were.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, when a warrior or someone died, they killed his wife too.
Yeah.
They burned her to death.
You're not going into the afterlife by yourself.
Yeah. They put all your everything
and that was honorable for her.
Everything on a boat. Yeah, she wanted to die.
Yeah.
And they may have killed 20 or 30 rams and drained their blood and did these things, and I'm like, you know,
to make sure you had everything you needed to be welcomed into the afterlife properly in Valhalla.
And I'm like, so are you really practicing these things, or are you walking around with, you know, the little necklace you can get on Wish, Mjolnir hammer.
Your Mjolnir hammer.
And, you know, everybody's got one of those.
And you know,
you see a guy that says he's worshiping Odin or whatever, but he's in a kilt, you know, and I'm like going,
wow.
Did they wear a kilt? You know, I'm a Stuart. My last name is Stuart. So, you know, my family was the actual royal family of Scotland. My patents goes all the way back to Robert the Bruce.
Wow.
I am a direct descendant. He was my great, 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 whatever back grandfather.
Wow.
So we've done the family tree and the whole ancestry thing on that. And so I'm like, I don't think that the Celts were worshiping Norse gods.
And where this comes to, Jeff, is the fact of, once again, clogging the sieve. And when you're looking at things, especially in the modern light, like you said, I've had this conversation with Lyle Blackburn. I've had this conversation with Craig Woolheater, with King Gerhardt, probably every cryptozoologist now that I've had on my show. And the idea that Bigfoot and the paranormal are now fully commingled. And the problem is, how do you get somebody like a Jerry Heston who's out there doing wood ape research, doing good tracking, doing things like that, and then at the same time, you've got Bigfoot portals, right? Yes, and I'm not saying that they don't exist. I'm not saying that they aren't there. I'm much more of the mind that the ones with portals are probably something else that lives in the woods that are using tropes from our mind that we are comfortable with.
That's exactly where I kind of that's where I kind of go with this. I think that there's two totally separate things going on here.
That's two different phenomenologies.
I am in the flesh and blood Bigfoot school.
Same.
They
same.
Cannot cloak. I mean,
they can cloak the same way a jaguar
degrees.
Can.
I have degrees. I have scientific degrees, so I'm not an idiot. I have a doctorate, you know.
I went to school long enough to be a doctor, Jeff.
You know, kind of thing, you know. Hey, I've got a doctorate from a good online university. It's almost worth the paper it's printed on.
I got a lot of books.
But still, you know, you do some research and you find that, well, there is no hair-covered mammal that can cloak. Basically. We've got cuttlefish, things like that, fish.
Chromatophores
and things
chameleons,
like that.
Chameleons, reptiles, amphibians.
Yes, things like that, that can do certain amounts of camouflage.
Sure.
But then I tell people all the time, you know, I've hunted my entire life, and I pride myself on being one of the best trackers that there is. Anytime someone needs something, whether it's an escaped convict, a lost child, whatever, they come get me. And I track them. And I've also sat in a stand and been in a middle of a pasture, 40 acres. Look this way, nothing. Look this way, nothing. Turn back, look this way, and there's a deer that's standing out in the middle of the field. And that deer made it all the way out in the middle of the field without me seeing it.
Or hearing it,
or anything else. It made it out there. You know why? Because it can do exactly what I've learned to do over the years. I use the terrain. I use shadows. I use the
wind
vegetation,
direction.
The wind, move when the wind's blowing so that, you know, it makes noise and you can't hear me. All of these things.
Yeah.
And I have people that say, well, I've been standing there and looking a Bigfoot in the face, man, and it just disappeared. Well, you know, I don't like to call anybody a liar or anything like that. But here's what I've had to say, and I've talked on this topic before at a couple of conferences, that there is just as there is spiritual, paranormal people, ghosts, as we like to call them, they're entities.
Yeah.
Well, if you believe in the fact that there can be a ghost dog, ghost cat, ghost, you know, you've heard of all these spectral animals.
Yeah.
Well, then if there's humans that are ghosts, residual hauntings of people. There's active and residual hauntings. So why can't there be active and residual hauntings with these creatures as well?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And once again, nobody's saying that there isn't an entity that lives out in the woods. Things like that, that once again are using our psychological tropes to basically hijack our consent.
And fear does a lot to the human mind.
Fear does a huge amount to the human mind.
You see things, you do, when that fight or flight response
and
kicks in.
People also forget, Jeff, that absence of stimuli does a huge amount to the human mind. Feel free to go check the work of Dr. Linsfield, who made the Linsfield goggles that were literally just a blue field. Just a blue field. Feel free to try it, folks. Get yourself some, like, cloud blue spray paint and spray paint a pair of goggles. And just put them on and sit there for 5 minutes. And wait and see what your mind starts creating. You'll start seeing geometric shapes, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Your brain craves stimuli.
Right.
And when you're out in the middle of the dark woods and you're in a heightened state and you're looking for that heightened state. And once again, I say it on my show regularly. I have had my experiences, even religious, that like other people were in the room. Nobody felt it. Nobody saw it. So I will always believe the experiencer until proven otherwise.
Yeah,
however,
I tell people all
at that
time
point, the burden of proof becomes larger. If you're talking about just seeing a Bigfoot and you find a palm print on the ground, that's one thing. But man, when you're talking Porter, I guess the problem comes in the fact of now which way do you start researching? Which way do you start pinch removing it?
Well, my big deal that I draw away from are people that say that they habituate. Now, that's one that I throw out the window because I think it's totally crap. Because there is no way that you've got people that are going out, taking some Cheetos, putting them in a dog food bowl, setting them out in the woods, and then walking away. We don't put a camera over it. We don't do anything. We walk away. We come back tomorrow and the Cheetos are gone. Bigfoot had to have eaten it. Bigfoot ate it. And then
not a raccoon.
Yeah, not a raccoon, not a fox, not any of the 4,000 native species that will eat a Cheeto.
That will eat a Cheeto.
Gross. You know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in a dog food bowl, and it's gone in the morning, and it had to be Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You know, they go out in the woods and they find some sticks that are crossed. Oh, Bigfoot did it. And I'm going, I'm not saying Bigfoot didn't do that, but I'm saying you have no proof Bigfoot did it.
Well, there's a great researcher that I have on my show regularly, Stephen Myers, from the Pharaoh's Pump organization. And one of his big things is correlation is not evidence.
Yeah.
Just because the pyramids align to the stars in Orion and that correlates does not mean that that is why they were built that way.
Yeah.
I
had a lady walk up last conference.
It's hard to grasp that sometimes.
Well, this chick walks up, really nice lady. She walks up and she's like, just breaks up in this conversation and she throws out this name like, and I'm like, looking at her and she says, that's the Bigfoot word for God. And I'm like, oh, really?
Oh.
And she's like, I speak their language. And I said, you speak whose language? I speak the Bigfoot language. And I said, oh, you do? The forest people, you speak their language. She said, yes, I speak their language. I commune with them every day. And I looked at her and I said, no, you don't. She said, yes, I do.
You might be communing with something.
I said, no, you don't. She said, yes, I do. I said, okay. I said, I'm going to tell you what. I said, I'm going to promise this to anybody out there. I don't care how morally superior you think you are. Anybody that brings forth the golden goose of the 100% irrefutable evidence that Bigfoot exists, that is DNA evidence, that is like real true evidence, not crap, but real true evidence, you're going to bring it forward because you just became a millionaire. You just became the richest person. Yeah. And guess what? At that point in time, if you have your mental faculties together, I just became a millionaire. And guess what I can do now? I can go and buy thousands of acres of property and make it a sanctuary. Yeah. I could get grants from the government to research. These animals are proven. They just became an endangered species and it just became illegal for anybody to hurt one. So you could really achieve everything you ever wanted to do.
All kinds of things.
But instead you're driving around in your 1973 Pinto with three bald tires and a spare on it. And you don't have enough money to buy a cheeseburger, but you're Bigfoot's best friend and you're proving that Bigfoot, I know they exist. We do know they exist, but you're not going out in your backyard in the middle of the suburbs or wherever you're at, trailer park, wherever you're at. You're not going out there and spending copious amounts of time with a real flesh and blood creature.
Yeah.
And then telling everybody, I don't want to put forth any evidence because I don't need to. Well, if that was the case, you wouldn't have ever even told me you talked to Bigfoot. If you wanted it to be a secret and you wanted to protect them, then you wouldn't even let people know you talked to them. You wouldn't let people know that they even existed.
That was an option because then they'd be out traipsing in the woods trying to talk to us.
If I had a friend and the mafia was after my friend and I knew the mafia was going to kill my friend, and I talk to my friend every single day, I would not go and tell everybody that I'm talking to this person because the mafia would find out and come get him, right?
Somebody's going to tell them.
So if I want to protect him, the best thing I can do is keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
And so if these people really wanted to protect Bigfoot and they were really in communication with them on a regular basis and everything like they say they are, then they would keep their mouth shut because they would be protecting these people.
Or like you said, on the other side, they would be shooting flares in the air.
Yes.
So that attention would come so that they could get money and conserve them.
Because I'm like this, if I know that Bigfoot's in my backyard.
Yeah.
And I'm out there talking to them every day. I've learned their language. I've spent enough time with them. Coming from, I was a law enforcement officer for a while. And coming from that aspect, I know that as there's nothing, you can't walk through this room right here that you and I are sitting in without leaving DNA, hair, whatever.
Alleles, what have you.
Yes, yes.
Oils.
You touch something, you know, your sweat, your
yeah,
oils.
Even the back of your hand's going to leave DNA behind.
So I would be able to get some sort of DNA, hair, whatever from you. I would not have to make it seem intrusive. I could just touch you and get some. So these people, they're like, oh, I don't want any evidence. I can't get any evidence.
It's tough.
There's no evidence there. And they're like, I want to talk to you about Bigfoot.
Well,
but I don't want, when you say, well, why don't we go prove they exist? Well, wait a minute. I don't want to prove they exist.
And there's, in all of these, we talk regularly with our guest, Jeff. There's two critical issues going on, whether it's UFOs, UAPs, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, cryptids, paranormal, doesn't happen. There are two things going on with both the experiencer and the person talking with them. A, the want of confirmation. Want of confirmation of what you believe, period. The want to belong.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason that we all go to church. It's not just because we believe in the same thing. It's because we like being in the presence of other people who believe the same thing. Well, so finding that common connection is a huge integral part of that.
Right.
And that want of confirmation of what I believe is true. And then married with that, you have the very dangerous thing in our society right now of confirmation bias. And the fact of even when presented with a stack of facts, facts.
Yeah.
And these are all points of datum added to your data set. Look at them dispassionately.
Yeah.
Not trying to crush your paradigm. But here's some points of data.
Exactly.
That will add to your data set. And me as a skeptic, my job as a skeptic isn't to destroy people's things. I am a believer's believer.
Right.
My job is to have my mind changed. That's my job.
Yeah.
Is to be open enough to go, well, there's some new evidence that I was not even aware of. My opinion is utterly changed now.
Right. Exactly.
And that's my job, is to take in new points of datum to my data set and change what I believe according to that.
And I think
a lot of people are lacking in
that area. I try to keep an open mind.
Same.
I try to keep a really open mind, except for when it comes to things that make my...
Skin crawl?
Well, I don't want to use profanity, you know.
We do have a couple children in the hallway.
Yeah, you know, but it makes my bullcrap meter go off the charts because, like I said, when you come up and you want me to believe something you're saying at face value, but if you investigate what they're saying makes no logical sense.
Yeah.
And then they're like, but you just have to believe me. No, I don't have to just believe you. I give you credence for saying what you said. And I will not, without a little bit of reason, I will not get totally sideways about telling somebody that they're full of hot air. But there are a few things that just make me go, ugh, because of doing this for so long. I've been doing this for 20 plus years. And being a tracker, being someone that gets out there and former law enforcement, I know how critical evidence is.
Yeah.
And every time, and people think, oh, well, you can just go out there and get some DNA and have it sent off. They don't realize how expensive having a DNA test run on a sample, just a blind sample.
And the proper necessary ways to preserve that evidence so that it can be properly used and not contaminated before it gets to the lab.
Here's the thing. Everything that I've ever had tested, that's the first thing that they do is they tell me this was contaminated.
Yep.
But when I collect it, I send in, when I've been able to afford it, I've sent in a sample of my DNA.
Yeah, so it can be cross-checked.
And I'm like, I'm the only person that came into contact with this out in the woods. Therefore, I used gloves. I used whatever to get it, but I'm sending you my DNA so you can cross check my DNA to see if it was contaminated by me.
Yes, yeah, so you can remove it from the data set. Absolutely.
And they're like, well, it's contaminated. It had human DNA in it. Well, now, wait a minute. Okay, it had human DNA, but so you're telling me I've got a missing person.
Was it my DNA?
Yeah, if it wasn't my DNA, are you telling me I have a missing person in my woods?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, not just anybody's walking around. I have my land's private.
Yeah.
So is somebody out in my woods, you know, I don't know. So was it human DNA? You say it was human DNA. Was it 100% human DNA? Tell me what's going on. And the next thing you know, oh, I can't tell
you. We've got a lot of another anomalies, but we can tell you that 70% it's human DNA.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you do know that we share like 94% DNA with
earthworms,
with chimps and,
like
and
earthworms
everything.
Too.
Yeah. You know,
like
92%. 92% with it. Yeah. So you're telling me that it's 70%. So, I mean, 70% is not, that's not telling me much.
Yeah.
That's not giving me an idea of what this looks like. What is it, bipedal? Is it crawling on the ground? Has it got 100 different little legs? I mean,
that has been the rallying cry of my show scientifically for the last year, Jeff, is I would like you to go out, find you a general contractor, and have him build you 98% of a wall, and you'd be cool with that.
Yeah, or 70%.
I don't know. I don't know of a chemist that when they're doing things and they're going through their experiment and they're missing 2% of solution, and it's not in residue, it's not in remainder. You got to figure out quantitatively what happened to the 2%.
1% can be the difference between having an acid that
2% is the difference between a chimp and us.
Yeah, and I'm like, you've got a carbonated drink right over there. Okay, it has acid in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
1%, 2% is the difference between that and battery acid.
Exactly. Exactly. And once again, feel free. If I paid you for 100% of the wall, where's the other 2%?
Yeah.
Where's the other 2%?
When rain's falling on your head.
We're willing to say, no, it doesn't exist when there's a 2-8% margin of evidence that says it does.
It does.
And really, really hardcore says it
just
does.
In the case of Bigfoot. Just in the case of Bigfoot.
No, no, exactly.
We are sitting here saying, okay, we have people that have had sightings and credible sightings.
Yep.
That we would take their word in a court of law and send someone to the electric chair or put a needle in their arm based on their testimony. Yeah. We've got law enforcement officers. We've got lawyers. We've got judges. We've got doctors. We've got clergy. We've got people that are of the highest regard as far as their credibility and their word prestige goes.
Yeah.
And these people say, I saw it. And we're like, oh, man, they're nuts. You know, thousands and thousands of sightings all over just North America.
Yeah.
And they tell, well, you're nuts. All of a sudden, you're nuts. But if that same person walked in and said, I just witnessed a guy.
I just witnessed a crime.
A crime.
And this gentleman held somebody up at gunpoint.
And he's going to prison based on that testimony.
Yeah.
But if that same person walks in and says, I just saw Bigfoot, he's crazy.
Well,
he's
a
liar.
You know, that has been a big conversation on the show here, especially in the last year, since we now have an annual UFO UAP report paid for by Congress, things like that. It takes a lot to get to that point.
Yeah.
Even with targeted individuals, we have a lot of targeted individuals that listen to this show. And I would love for there to be a law in the United States where the government cannot experiment on the public. Yeah. That would be great.
That would be it would be great.
It would be awesome.
There would be a great,
however,
to have an accountability for that.
We have to get it to a point where there's enough of a conversation.
Yeah.
And there was finally a point with UFOs, UAPs, where there was enough of a conversation and enough people that were in charge of things that were like, whoa, 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 I didn't hear about this, and there was money given to it, and I'm in charge of the money. What's going on? And now there's a conversation. And now, as opposed to before, where, yes, we had people that we spent millions of dollars training.
Yeah.
We leave them in charge of million-dollar jets every day.
Yeah.
But we don't believe what they say.
Exactly.
So now there's a unified system of reporting where there is no more shame.
We've got pilots
and
that we put in 747s with 150 but passengers' lives in their hands, and the we problem, tell them they're lying about a UFO. Yeah.
And if you tell us, we're going to take your wings, you're not going to work anymore. And that's a big problem. That's a big problem. And the real big problem is whenever that dude reports it, and if they go, okay, here you go. When the Navy pilot reports it, it's a totally different process of evidence. So how are you supposed to compare and contrast if you don't have a unified system of compare and contrast data, if you don't have a unified way to approach the data? This is why forensics exists.
And think about this. Think about this, knowing military and things like that. So you're telling me that we've got a multi-million dollar jet flying through the air with the most highly trained pilot on Earth.
Literal multi-million dollar machine of a human being.
Air Force and Navy pilot behind this thing. This guy's dedicated, or lady, dedicated their entire lives to flying a plane, the most stringent adherence to learning and
protocol,
observation.
Protocol, yeah, observation. Protocol.
And you're telling me that this person saw, like, I'm flying at Mach 3, and I look over, and there is something flying beside me that I've never seen before, never seen its shape. Its shape does not fit that of what we think of conventional aircraft.
Sure.
And in an instant, this thing goes gone. And then makes a 90-degree turn straight up, and the pilot reports it, and it's like, where does that go? And we find out that they were seeing these things quite often, and it was like, hey, you know, you really probably don't want to tell anybody that you saw that, because you could lose your wings.
Yeah. No, you could lose your entire career. You could lose 30 years of life.
You lose your wings. You're probably going to lose your pension.
Oh, you're definitely losing your pension.
You know, you're going to get...
Take one, guys. They're free.
You're going to get discharged.
Yeah.
And just depending on
dishonorably, more than likely.
Well,
they probably
wouldn't hit them with a dishonorable, but they would hit them with an other than honorable.
Yes.
So, because dishonorable takes, you know, you really had to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than honorable.
That's true.
I mean, other than honorable, that's just like you were late too many days to chow or something, you know?
Yeah.
So these people got everything to lose. So, you know, okay, I'm not going to say anything. And then you find out, man, they were reporting these things all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm right there with the reporting, and we don't – it's weird, like I was saying. It's weird how we take people at their word when another human being's life is on the line.
Yeah.
And that same exact person is a crazy liar if they saw a Bigfoot, a Chupacabra, a Loch Ness Monster, a Mothman, anything.
The exact same person.
You know, I saw a tassel worm. A what? A tassel worm. Didn't even know. I mean, I'm a cryptozoologist, man. Never even heard of a tassel worm. The other day, somebody sends me a deal. Hey, what do you think of these? And I'm going, oh, okay. No, I don't think we have those in East Texas.
Wow.
But, you know, but it's like they're automatically a lie. And it goes back to the thing. I remember whenever I was in training to become a law enforcement officer. And my question to one of our instructors was, why does a woman's occupation or a man's occupation affect their eyesight? And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, if a woman is a lawyer, a judge, or whatever, her eyesight is trusted and is impeccable. And we don't question it. If she says she saw it, we give her 100% credence that she saw it. But if a woman is living in a trailer park, if she's maybe a prostitute, if she's maybe just works at the local convenience store, anything.
Works at the liquor store, package shop, whatever.
Anything. The tobacco barn. Who knows? All of a sudden, her eyesight's not as trustworthy and not as good as the eyesight of the doctor, lawyer, judge, or whatever.
Which
your social standing automatically affects your eyesight.
Well, it goes straight to literally the root of our judicial system, the innocent until proven guilty. You know what?
Now,
why is that person not as innocent as the other person?
But we both know that
to...
it's the other way around.
Sure.
We both know that, especially coming from a law enforcement background, we both know that you are guilty until proven innocent.
You're guilty from the moment you're stopped on the side of the road.
Because if that was the case, if you were innocent until proven guilty,
yeah.
Why is everyone, you're incarcerated.
Ticketed.
You're incarcerated.
You'd be ticketed. You wouldn't be taken in.
Well, put it like this. What's going to happen? Here's the thing. This way off this subject, but I love this subject. What is fixing to happen? Because Texas just passed the bill to decriminalize marijuana.
Oh, did it pass?
Well, it passed. We got one more vote, but it passed the first stage of votes.
Good.
It passed huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It resoundingly passed.
Yes. So what are we going to do with all of these people that are in prison right now, that are in prison not for being Pablo Escobar, not for being a cartel member,
not for
trafficking, you know, 200-pound bales of marijuana into a preschool.
No, they had an ounce for the weekend.
Yeah, they had a little bit, and believe me, I'm not a proponent of people going out there and doing all kinds of drugs, but we're not talking about meth here. We're not talking about cocaine here. We're not talking about heroin. We're talking about a plant that grows wild or
just about the whole globe.
We're talking about feel good tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, you can grow them just like growing a tomato plant in the garden.
Yeah.
So we're talking about this. And I'm like, what are we going to do if we decriminalize this? Are we going to let these people out of jail? Are we going to remove that felony charge off of them that is going to keep them from voting, that is going to keep them from getting a good job, that is going to keep them from being a productive member
of
society?
Keep them on a list.
That's going to keep them on a list that the next time they get pulled over for speeding, they're going to get jacked up on the trunk of the car.
Well, literally when you go to get an apartment and they're like, oh, we noticed that you had this felony charge of possession.
Yep. Sorry, you can't live here. Even though you have three children that you're trying to feed and support, they need a roof over their head. We don't care.
Even though you fully passed the credit check and your charges were fully expunged. I literally say that out of experience because I had a possession charge and literally had, I didn't go to jail. I did probation. I did everything. Literally, first thing that happened when I moved to Austin, they almost didn't let me move into my fiance's apartment and get on the lease because of that. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even convicted, my man.
My son lost his job.
I wasn't even convicted.
My adopted son, had been working at his job since he was 15 years old. He was 25 years old. He already had, at 25, he already had
ruined
10
lives.
Years in.
Ruining lives.
Well, what happened? His ex-girlfriend got pissed off at him.
Hmm?
And she called and reported him because she knew that he liked to smoke.
Yep.
But he never messed up, man. He did it recreationally at home, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But he had it in his car in the parking lot.
You got to get it home.
Had it in his car in the parking lot.
I'm not going to lie.
They brought the drug dog down.
I went over the state line and picked up liquor and brought it back yesterday to a dry county.
Yeah. Man, you're a thug, man. But what I'm saying,
represent.
But my son lost his job.
Yeah.
And now he went from having 10 years in, only needed 10 more years. He could have retired at 35 years old with 20 years on the job.
Yeah.
And he lost it all. And people are saying, oh, but he shouldn't have had, you know, it's illegal. He shouldn't have had it. And I understand that. I'm not making excuses for
him.
But what I'm saying is, this is such
the foolishness of it legally to begin with.
Because I have a severe psoriatic arthritis.
Sure.
Severe. I'm talking about there's days I can't get up and walk. They've put me on every kind of opioid you can imagine, and they mess me up.
Yep.
I can't take them. They've put me on all of these. They put me on chemotherapy.
Wow.
That's what my doctor told me. Wow. This drug that we're giving you is basically chemotherapy for arthritis patients, and it made me so sick that every day I was throwing my guts up and everything.
Yeah.
And my son that got arrested, my son came along and he said, "Dad, try this." And I said, "No, I don't smoke weed, man."
Yeah.
He said, "No." I said, "I'm gonna get you some gummies." And he said, I want you to just cut them into fourths.
Yeah.
And just take a tiny piece.
Yeah, microdosing.
And see what it does for your feet. So he did. Brought me a little thing, and I'm like, man, I'm so against doing recreational drugs. I don't even want to drink, you know. So, bam, bam, cut it into fourth. I take one. Man, 2 hours later, my feet feel good. I can get up and walk.
Yeah.
I'm walking without crying almost. And I'm like, wow. So the next day, take a fourth. Next day, take a fourth. I'm not getting high. There's nothing making me high.
No. Not enough in there to get you high.
Not enough to get me high. But it's numbing my pain in my feet enough that I can function.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, I became a believer in the medicinal.
Absolutely.
I was always one of these people that read the literature and went, dope heads just wanting to get this stuff legalized.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting here and I'm researching it and I'm like,
It's been an indigenous cultures across the globe for thousands of years.
A fifth of whiskey has killed more people than an ounce of weed ever has.
Ever. I say all the time, I spent probably a good half of my career in the world of rock and roll, working in clubs and things like that. I never saw a fight break out on Grateful Dead night.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Nights where people are drinking
I've
all
worked
night,
as a bouncer
all night.
In a lot of clubs.
Stoner shows?
And
never happened.
Some of the funniest things that have ever happened to me is you work I'm not into country western music. I'm a metalhead. But you work a country western venue.
Oh, they like fighting.
Man, there's 500 fights
like,
a night.
They like fighting.
Billy Bob and Little Joe are fighting every 10 minutes. You're breaking up fights. But I go to a venue where you walk in and you're like, okay, is somebody like fighting skunks in the pit down here? Because it's like, you're like, whoa, that's some skunky. And you're there and all night long, there ain't no fight. One.
Yeah.
And it's there's a mosh pit.
Yeah.
There's slam dancing from back in the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And people are coming out bloody.
But they're supporting each other.
And they're laughing. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, brother.
Yeah.
And their eyeball is like, swole up the size of a grapefruit, and they're like, man, this is fun. They didn't go and start a fist fight with that person that they were in the mosh pit with because
they were mutually in a mosh pit.
Yeah, they were, and they didn't care.
Yeah.
They weren't drunk and getting mad at the world because their wife left them for their cousin.
And that's just it. The misconceptions all over the place, I think, is a lot of the problem, period. Whether you're talking this, drugs, paranormal, what have you, it really is the fact that we have to learn to understand each other more and be willing to stop and listen to each
other. Here's a big key that it's kind of a philosophy that I try to go by. I don't have to agree with you on everything for us to be friends.
Yeah.
I don't even have to agree with you on most things. But I need to respect you.
That's it.
I need to respect the fact that you have the right to believe the way you want to believe. And I also think that you have the right to not believe the way I believe.
That's right.
You have the right to believe your way, but you have the right to not believe my way. And I don't have the right to force you to, you know, and that's where people got such a bad taste in their mouth for religion so many years ago.
Yeah.
Is because they were getting beat in the head with a Bible and a pulpit and saying, well, if you don't believe the way we believe, then you're a piece of crap.
Yeah.
You know, and then you come like me and been going to church my whole life, you know, and I was kind of under a veil of misconception. And then I get all these friends that are Buddhist and that are Muslim and that are all of this. And we sit in the same room. And we play card games or we play video games together, you know, Call of Duty or this, that, or the other. And we never fight. We never get mad at each other because we all respect each other.
That's
and we have boundaries.
Exactly.
And if we're hanging out, put it to you like this, if we're hanging out and I know that our religions are different, we have to have the understanding and the respect that we're not going to talk religion.
Yeah.
If we have different opinions on Bigfoot, we have to either come to an understanding that we're not going to talk about Bigfoot, or we're going
once
to say we're going to have
point of conversation.
We're going to have a spirited debate.
Yeah.
But once anybody starts getting too heated about it, walk away.
Yeah, we're going to change topics.
Because I mean, I've got friends that are totally into the woo-woo crap into Bigfoot.
Totally.
You know, and they're like, you know, well, he can materialize and he can vanish and he can, you know, portal and do all this. And I've got a really good friend and he witnessed a portal. He witnessed it.
Wow.
But then I start questioning because the person that took him on the expedition where they saw the portal is a licensed psychiatrist. He has access to all kinds of psychotropic drugs.
Wow.
But he's also really into feel-good pharmaceuticals, bathroom pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
So I'm sitting here, and I'll ask my friend, I say, so when you went on this expedition, did you bring your own food and drinks? No, they provided them.
Oh.
I said, okay. Did you go into the cooler and get these food and drinks, or were they handed to you? They were handed to me. I said, you were dosed with LSD, my friend. Because you were told all of the stories of these portals, what these portals look like, what the creatures look like that were going in and out of the portals.
Yeah.
And then you were dosed with LSD and by suggestion, power of suggestion, and given
sure
LSD, you were on a trip, bro.
Yeah.
And he's like, you think that was it? He said, because I saw it. I said, I know you saw it. I believe you 120%.
Sure.
You saw it. But look, just because you saw it doesn't mean it was real.
That's true.
I said, so what I'm saying is don't question your own sanity because there are people
question
out
the
there,
circumstances your sighting.
Question the circumstances.
Question the circumstances of your sighting and be willing to accept
right.
that.
So as long as we can respect each other,
yeah,
we don't have to agree.
Yeah.
We can totally disagree on our Bigfoot research. You can have people out there that are woo-woo
yep.
and believe in all of this stuff, and they have their place. Just like we have a lot of stuff, a lot of scientists, you know, string theory yep. and, oh, gosh, what was the other one? There was string theory, and then there was it was a big, funny episode on the Big Bang Theory. Mm. You know, I really loved that show. But they were like, had some, you know, real big arguments over theoretical physics
oh, yeah.
and quantum physics and all of these different physics types, you know. And the fact that none of them are provable,
yeah.
you know, and they're fighting about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm sitting here going, I love it because it just showed because they are arguing. They think that each other's work basis is crap.
Yeah.
But they love each other.
Yeah.
They're best friends.
Exactly.
They get on each other's nerves and they do all of these things, but they're still best friends.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Brothers,
I know it's busy. We're getting ready to get busy here again.
Been my pleasure.
I need to have you on again and again
anytime,
and again.
Anytime, man.
I know we see each other on Facebook all the time, but let everybody know where they can go to get their copy of Man vs. Bigfoot, where they can go to follow everything. Crypto Hulk Stewart.
They can contact me for a copy if they want a DVD, but we are on several streaming services. We are on Amazon streaming. We are also on some free streaming sites
Ooh,
with it.
Freebie, Tubi, things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Tubi, TBI.
Yep.
Really good. You got to watch
great
commercials
one.
With it, but hey, it's free.
Commercials are how people get paid.
Yeah, so it's free.
Yeah.
So this is a really good one. We got another project planned, another Bigfoot movie.
Nice.
Planned. Hopefully we can get funding going. We've been really trying to hustle and get some funds because we make these movies out of our own pocket.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't have big Hollywood deep pockets.
They are passion projects and by passionate people. That's the beautiful thing about it.
Made this movie. I slept in a tent for a month and a half.
Wow.
In a tent. I ate cheese and crackers and things like that to make this movie happen. And it was a labor of love. David Ford and myself at Saving Oscar Productions. I did all the special effects. I built the Bigfoot costumes.
Oh, wow.
I play Bigfoot in the movie. Plus, I play a couple other characters in the movie. But this movie was a labor of love.
Well, thank you so much for your time once again.
Brother.
I greatly appreciate it. While you are online, checking out everything from Jeff Crypto Hulk Stewart and getting your copy of Man vs. Bigfoot, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That is where you can find all of our content. That is where you can find all the episodes. CuriousRealm.com/story is where you can go to share your experience of Bigfoot, cryptids, paranormal, UFO, UAPs. If you're a targeted individual or whistleblower, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. Share your story with us, and we will share it with our experts and try to get you some answers. Hold on through this commercial break. We'll be right back with more presenters here at the 2023 Falk Monster Festival here in Falk, Arkansas. Be right back, folks. Stay tuned. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast.
Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet Audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to our continuing coverage of the Falk Monster Festival 2023. We are here live in Falk, Arkansas. With us right now is the amazing artist and author, Saffron Cannon. She wrote the book Only 6 Feet Away, which is a children's book about Boggy Creek.
In Falk, Arkansas.
In Falk, yes. Arkansas, as well as Randy the Chickadog, and she's also, there it is, the amazing painter who painted the picture that I just got. So, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us how you first, came to the world of Falk legend, things like that, and what brought you to write 6 Feet Away?
Okay, so, first of all, ever since I was in the fifth grade, I wanted to be an illustrator and a writer. Okay. And I didn't follow that path because it's kind of a hard path to follow.
It's convoluted.
Yes. So I ended up becoming a teacher.
Okay.
And I was a math teacher, a special ed teacher. And along the way, I was drawn to art. I was an art teacher. And then I decided to start writing these books about, it's called My Small Town Adventure Series.
Okay.
It's about towns or places that I hold dear to my heart that not a lot of people know about.
Yeah.
And so this was the first one, but as far as this one, Only 6 Feet Away, my grandpa told it to his Legends of the Falk Monster to my dad, and my dad told him to me.
Oh, wow.
And then I told him to my daughter, Juliet. And Juliet is actually one of the characters in this story, but anyways. She, even in the dedication, it says, to for Juliet, my 8-year-old daughter, she inspired this story and helped with important plot details. I realized the story needed to become a story when I was telling her this story, and then she just would say, she said one thing to me that would make it like a really good book. Because every time they mistake, the Falk Monster is always lurking in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, she said, why do you keep saying it's only 6 feet away every time? I was saying 6 feet away every time.
Yeah.
And she said, why don't you count down?
Oh.
So it counts down. So every time they expect it's different. So it starts off that it's a...
it's only 6 feet away.
And it's real. So, you know, it turns out this time it was Mr.
And
Black.
And I love the Lyle Blackburn in here.
Well, it's actually Mr. Blackstone, but okay. It is based on... You know,
Lyle Blackburn.
Yeah, yes. Because this was 1967. Maybe it was his dad or something.
But it's absolutely fantastic. I love the fact that you are carrying on, once again, not only this local tradition, but the tradition of small towns in storybook to children. My family is from Mamou, Louisiana.
Oh,
literally single red light town.
I know, Mamou. I'm actually, my next book I'm going to write is My Grandma Grew Up on a Houseboat in Gross State.
Oh, wow.
And that's going to be the next one. Because there's so many cool places that people don't really know about.
Yeah. I mean, most people know Mamou either from the Hank Williams song that brought it fame, which was done before Hank Williams did it, oddly enough, as well as Fred's Lounge, which is a state landmark in the state of Louisiana as the official home of Cajun music, where Cajun music got its start. And I talk on the show regularly about you want to see a beautiful thing, go out and witness a Mardi Gras in a town like that.
In where New Roads was the first Mardi Gras ever, which is this town that this is about.
Absolutely.
And you know, you can put, like, kids can learn so much from this.
Absolutely.
You know, here's a map and it tells about the lake and stuff like that. So I just think that it's a beauty that no one is showing.
Exactly.
In children's books. I mean, some people might, but you know, it's rare.
Well, it's not only the idea of the story, but the idea of the concept. And introducing children to the idea of, A monster doesn't have to be scary. Just because something is in the woods and you don't know what it is doesn't mean it has to be scary.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And even the idea of things like Bigfoot, UFOs, UAPs, like, it's interesting to see how many children's books are coming out now in these genres.
Yes, because it's so fun.
Well, I think it's more the fact of we're open. We're the parents now. Like, you know, I know my grandmother would gladly tell me any story she knew about things like that. I know my grandfather would have more than gladly had he been around longer. However, being able to carry on these traditions, being able to carry on the stories that make towns. Falk is a prime example. There's a lot of people in Falk who don't really care for the tradition of the Falk monster. They'd prefer all the strangers go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need all the looky-loos traipsing around in our bayou, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same token, it does great things for a town.
It really
and
does.
And it does something as far as teaching a generation and generations of people to appreciate something about their town, something that makes their town unique. And especially, it became a mission of mine a long time ago to expose people to the Cajun culture. Because it is truly one of the only cultures in America that is unique to America. Like, it only exists here.
I mean, parishes.
And in that small spot, that's it. And to know that people like my grandfather were not only ridiculed, but discouraged from speaking Cajun in school.
When my grandpa came here.
Put into the corner for speaking their language.
When my grandpa came here, they could not. They spoke broken English, and they told them to go home until they could.
You could speak English,
right. This was in New Roads.
Yeah.
Until you can go home until you can speak English.
Yep.
And then now, when I was in school, they were trying to teach us French.
Yeah, because that is a concept that we talk about on the show regularly. It does. People think it takes hundreds of years, thousands of years for something to get lost. No, man.
It doesn't take long.
Like 30 years.
One generation can
lose it. That's it. In a heartbeat.
Especially if you were made to feel like if you want it to be gone, like think about how they felt about it.
Yeah.
They thought speaking French was a horrible thing.
It was shameful.
So they didn't want to talk that, and they wanted to eradicate it. Why would they tell their children? Because they didn't like the way it made them feel, so they wouldn't carry on the tradition.
Well, even the whole use of the term kunas, for example, is a prime one. I regularly tell people, careful with your throw around of that term, because it really is kind of our word. But it's also one of those, like, it's interesting to see the fact that, yes, a culture was driven down, like, and not that long ago. This wasn't like a few hundred years ago. This was like 1950, where kids were still put in the corner. One of my favorite pictures is the picture of the kid in the corner with the dunce hat in the in the Cajun school, because he was speaking French. He was speaking his native language, you know. And to think about that, and to think about the fact that a whole culture that is unique only to America and a language that is unique only to here is almost gone within an entire generation.
And it shouldn't be.
It's mind-blowing.
It really is.
So things like this keep that alive. Things like this help people appreciate. Yeah.
A legend is passed down through word of mouth.
Yeah.
For generations.
Yeah.
And then I just think it's important to keep them alive.
Well, and that's just it. Bringing things like this that go from word of mouth, from person, as we see here. I mean, you can sit here in the hallway and hear stories on all sides from people's experiences. But at the same time, those are legend.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't share them, then they don't move forward. And nobody else knows to be open to the experience.
Yes, that's true.
You know? And I think that's probably the most important thing here is teaching the kids to be open to the experience. Teaching kids of 5, 6 years old not to be locked inside of a box in their mind or in how they think about something.
And go on in adventures.
Yeah, exactly. And not being afraid to go on the adventures, despite the spooky swamp. Despite everything else, despite the big monster on top of the mark, you still go on the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is so beautiful, so amazing. Let everybody know where they can go to get their copies of Only 6 Feet Away, as well as Randy the Chicken Dog, because
Okay.
This is, I read both of these a while ago.
Oh, you did?
Well, I mean, it took me an hour or so, but I...
This, well, see, this one's more for a
I did
older,
read them,
this one's more for yes. an older audience, but you can still read it to a smaller child by, like, you know, telling them the story, shortening mm-hmm. it, or this is, you could, it's of all ages, but it's older. This one, though, younger, because it rhymes, and
yeah.
I think they can. But you can go to Art by Saffron Cannon on Facebook and contact me. That's the way you can order these books.
All right.
Art by Saffron Cannon.
Fantastic. And what about your artwork? Because, once again, you so are not only the author, but you're the illustrator. And
I am. So
your
I
artwork
off,
is absolutely beautiful.
I started off doing art, actually, and I've been a teacher for 11 years, and I was mostly teaching math and special ed, but then I just... drawn to the art, and I just I just started painting, and then I started an art page, and I just love it.
What was it about?
I like
guess
doing
the subject.
I like you know the graffiti artist Banksy.
Yeah.
He always uses silhouettes in his work.
Yeah.
So it's a part inspiration. Oh, and of I kind of like the idea of taking something that's scary but making it pretty and still keeping the scariness at the same time. Like it's like fairy tale meets eeriness.
That's there were numerous paintings over there. This one I was drawn to because of the coloration. The coloring in it was very dreamlike for me.
I do a lot of different tree paintings, and I do like a red tree and a blue tree and a green tree.
Yeah,
and I do a lot of tape paintings where I tape the shapes of the trees.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Paint and then remove the tape.
Yeah, and I build the tree out of painter's tape.
Oh wow!
Little
yeah.
bitty tiny pieces and then peel it off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Your work is absolutely amazing. Once again, the books are awesome. Let everybody know where they can go to order their paintings, where they can go to order books from you.
Art by Saffron Cannon.
There you have it. While you are online checking out everything from Saffron Cannon at Art by Saffron Cannon on Facebook, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all the content. That is where you can stop by CuriousRealm.com/story, and you can share your story with us of the paranormal, your experience of cryptids. If you're a government whistleblower, stop on by. Fill out our form. We will present your information to our presenters and our guests on the show and try to get you some answers. We will be back right after this commercial break with more amazing coverage of the Falk Monster Festival live from Falk, Arkansas, right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to our continuing coverage of the Falk Monster Festival here in Falk, Arkansas. We have with us the amazing Chester Moore. He is not only the head of Higher Calling Wildlife here in Texas, but he is also the host of Dark Outdoors, an amazing podcast about really some of the darker sides of our national parks and state parks. Yeah. Like, a lot of people do not realize. And I grew up camping, things like that. Mm-hmm. Not as much as a lot of people, but I spent my time in Sam Houston National Park and Boy Scouts, all kinds of stuff. A lot of people do not realize the inherent dangers that are there now.
Yeah, you know, and thanks for all your kind words, by the way. I really appreciate that. But I write about fishing, hunting, wildlife conservation for a living.
Yeah.
You know, like, I came out of the birth canal interested in wildlife. It's like my favorite thing ever, right? And so it always finds me in wild places. And I kept running into dangerous situations with people. Huh. And I remember one day I was giving a seminar on feral hogs. And in the Q&A, someone said, "Hey, Chester, what's the most dangerous thing in the woods?" And I know they're expecting me to say a bear or a boar.
Sure.
And without blinking, I said, "People."
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Sam Houston National Forest. I spoke to a game warden when I first went down this journey. And I said, "Hey, would you mind if I interview you sometime about the dangers you game wardens go into?" And he said, "You mean like all the stuff happening in the Sam Houston National Forest?" You know?
Yeah.
So it's not just on public land. It's on private land. It's everywhere. And the media covers these crimes, but they don't cover it in the context of being really in the, they may mention a forest, but that's it. Mm. And the outdoor media that I work with doesn't cover it at all. So I thought, you know what? I better put something together. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's just it. Whenever I first spoke to you, which was about a year ago, it was the fact of trying to educate people that were going out for their first time because, yeah, this is an amazing community. And my brother and I were just having a conversation outside with Jeff Crypto Hulk Stewart about the fact of we're in a different movement now. Whereas squatching, things like that were once a fringe activity. A few people did it, things like that.
Yep.
Now you have droves of people going out into the woods in the middle of the night on purpose.
On purpose, yeah.
On purpose. Mm-hmm. Not to camp overnight or something like that, but literally to go out into the woods. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they may give somebody a direction that they're going, but some of the practices are a little Wild West and could be a little dangerous if you're plotting an expedition, things like that.
Yeah, and I think that really is the key you brought up. It's like you're plotting and you're doing your planning.
Yeah.
And people go in the woods for adventure, for peace, for solitude, and for beauty, right? And recreation.
Sure.
For fun. And kind of what I'm talking about here today is how the Phantom Killer, the Moonlight Murders from 1946, and the tie-in, of course, is that Charles B. Pierce made the Thunder at Sundown and the Legend of Boggy Creek.
Sure.
But I have located, and I really believe is a pattern that started with the Moonlight Murders that resonates today.
Yeah.
Happening in the great outdoors. It started with that, and I've seen it reflect. And people don't expect to go in these. They expect to be safer out there.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of times,
because you're away from everybody,
away from everything. And then, but there's that one person. There's that one encounter, and that's kind of what. And it started really with me and my dad on top of a mountain in 2002 in Humboldt County, California.
I was just about to say, ask anybody about the Emerald Triangle.
Brother, I didn't know about this.
You experienced it.
I didn't know about this. I knew that the Bluff Creek area was close.
Yeah.
And we were told by Al Hodgson, who started the Bigfoot Museum over there. I'd befriended him that the Tule elk were rutting in this one particular mountain. I'd just gotten Gen 3 night goggles. You can go, and he said, you'll be beautiful. You hear them all in this valley. So me and Dad found the place and went up there, and we're sitting there, and I have the night vision looking down the valley. It's dark, and I look down, and the light's going back up to me. And we're in the middle of nowhere. And I went, hey, Dad, somebody down there with the light. He goes, I don't see a light. I took my night vision goggles off. I didn't see a light. I said, he must turn it off. Put them back on. Now the light's going this way. I said, Dad, I see legs. I don't see a light. Then it clicked. Someone's down there with night vision.
Yeah.
Because you can have infrared flashlights, infrared lights. And I said, they're probably not looking for wildlife.
Yeah.
So we were at the end of a logging road, and the logging road cut across the mountain road on both sides, and about 3/4 mile that way, immediately lights turned on of a vehicle. We threw our crap in the rental, and as soon as we hit this little mountain road, and it's the first time I'd ever driven in the mountains in my life, from 14 feet elevation in Texas. This is my first mountain adventure. About 5 seconds later, the truck came behind us, and I ended up driving 75 to 80 down that mountain trying to get away from them.
Wow.
And they were trying to get to the side of us and push us.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up getting down to the quote-unquote highway in the middle of nowhere, and they went one direction, we went the other, and we knew that we had come across someone in the drug trade, obviously. We'd heard about that, but had no idea about the Emerald Triangle region.
And especially the extent to which it exists, because, I mean, you're talking acreage of forests that have literally been tiered. Like crazy multi-million dollar operations out in the middle of national forests.
Well, I called the Forest Service the next day and just said, hey, you know, this is what happened. They said, you're lucky you're alive.
Yeah.
I said,
yeah.
A freaking sign on the highway would have been nice. You know, warning, you know, cartel or whatever. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So we...
warning, American reefer cartel.
Yeah, this is spooky. You know, so like the... you know, later on, I was many years later, like 15 years later, I was at the National Wild Turkey Federation conference in Nashville doing my turkey conservation stuff. And I met a Forest Service game warden. I'd never met a forest. I met Texas Parks and Wildlife, U.S. So what do you guys mainly enforce? He goes, actually, illegal timber harvest. He goes, I just moved out of Humboldt County, California. And so I asked him, I had this experience there. And this guy gets this dead look on his face. He goes, son, you're lucky you're alive.
Oh, my God.
Go watch Murder Mountain on Netflix.
Yep.
And it turns out I mapped it out. We were probably 3 to 4 miles from the actual Murder Mountain.
Wow.
The physical Murder Mountain.
Yeah, we're just
Yeah.
Dozens of people went missing.
Yeah. So that began this journey of looking at the criminal elements, also dangerous wildlife conflict that's happening more and more.
Sure.
And even bizarre weather patterns. But probably the epicenter of it's the psychos, the criminal element part of this. And it has been a wild, wild ride.
Once again, it's remarkable. It's probably amongst the shows I listen to, the one that I've turned more people on to, especially whenever they say, like, oh, I love the true crime stuff. I'm like, no, 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 no. You need to go listen to real true crime stuff, dude, that will make you, like, not want to go camping again.
Well, you know, my slogan's pray, prepare, and pack heat.
That's right.
And part of this actually was founded, this idea was founded in Falk, Arkansas with Smokey Crabtree.
Oh, wow.
So I got the slogan in my head because of something funny Smokey told me one time. So I came down and met him, legend of Boggy Creek, Bigfoot fan growing up. And Smokey was like 5 foot five. He talked like this, southern drawl, very calm. And Smokey had a gun as big as his hip. You know, it's a big 357 Magnum. He puts it on. He takes me down to the creek and show me and my dad a location. They filmed some of the movie. He goes, Chester, this ain't for the monster. It's for the people out here.
Yeah, it's for the people coming and looking for the monster.
Out here.
And like you said, once again, the most dangerous thing in the woods isn't the critters.
Yeah.
They're going to run from you. They're going to freeze most of the time rather than charge or come at you. It's the people that you may run up against. And even right now, one of your recent efforts with Dark Outdoors has been the Rainy Street murders in Austin. I live in Austin. I literally live right on the shores. I lived right on Oldtorf.
Yeah.
So it was right up against the shores of Lady Bird Lake, right by where everybody's been missing. It's strange because it is such a highly populated, highly trafficked area. I mean, it's right there along where everybody goes walking every day, every night.
Well, the way it hit my world is because I thought the number one people to, and this is kind of all founded in what's known as the smiley face killer phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, younger men targeted coming out of bars, ended up, you know, half a mile away in a river they supposedly just tripped in. Yeah. Yet the coroner says their body looked like they've been in the water 48 hours. They've been missing for a month and a half.
Yeah.
And I thought fishermen, kayakers, people like that are the ones most likely to see a body dump or something like that happened. So I said, I better look into this. And there was a case of a guy, and I forget, it might have been in Wisconsin or Minnesota. I forget now. I think Minnesota. Todd Geib. And he went to a keg party and in the woods at this place, ended up in this lake. And it was undeniably his body was put where it was found. And when this happened in Austin, I'm looking at the same pattern and going, holy smokes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, especially to see the similarities between the two. And once again, the smiley face killers was something that, as far as anybody knows, still fully going on.
Yeah.
That was a stretch of serial killings that happened across from the Northwest to the Northeast.
Well, it's happening in Chicago right now, too.
Exactly.
The founders, the guy, and I forget their name, Gannon's one of them, the cops that kind of coined the term.
Yeah.
They're actually one of them's in Chicago right now working on the cases there. But there have been people reach out from Houston about some cases that fit the profile. And that may be another episode, unfortunately. But the idea is awareness because you gotta be aware. And I think in the true crime realm, so much of it is fandom. Sometimes.
To an extent.
Some of the stuff's fandom. How many more John Wayne Gacy, you know, things can we have? But I wanted to take it to the level of, like, let's take it what's happening right now and figure out a way to keep us safe. That's my goal.
Well, exactly, because once again, your whole ministry is the advocacy of outdoors, period.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Whether it's working with youth to get them outdoors and get them to loving the outdoors change their life, or taking grown folk like me and getting them to reappreciate the outdoors.
That's it, man.
Like, you are a professional tracker.
Yep.
All kinds of things. Most of the books, I don't have them here because I purchased them last time I saw you.
Yep.
But 90% of your books are literally about wildlife conservation, tracking hogs.
Oh, that's stuff I love, man.
Yeah. And to know that this passion came out of that passion, I think, is what I find most beautiful.
Well, I appreciate that, man, because I know this. It was natural, and I hesitated to go down this road.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest. You're in the curious realm here, brother. Sometimes when you turn over rocks along the stream, bugs crawl out.
Snakes.
And some of them bite you.
Snakes, critters, all kinds of things.
But
yeah.
I just couldn't, knowing what I know and having the platform that I have already kind of in the media,
yeah,
not shine some light out there.
Well, you know? and that's just it, especially when you're talking Austin, prime example.
Yeah.
More and more people are getting out into the wooded areas of Austin. You're talking about a situation where politically here in the last couple of years, we had the public camping ordinance.
Yeah.
That happened just before COVID.
Yeah.
Thank Jesus for all those poor people that were on the street, that is when it happened.
Yeah.
And now they have been disenfranchised and pushed out. And yeah, their communities are now directly in that line of Rainy Street downtown, right up along the bank of the river and Lady Bird Lake. So, and some of those communities are rough, and there are transients that live inside of them that even are not welcome amongst the transients that live there.
Yeah. I got a friend of mine who does homeless ministry in another part of Texas. Yeah. We help her every once in a while. We'll go help her.
It can be rough, and
when you talk to some of the people, they'll warn you about certain others areas. Yeah. Like, you know, that's kind of where the people who are involved in something we don't know, but it ain't good, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so when you got these different communities out there and people don't have an understanding of it, and it's funny about Austin, because I always use Austin as an example. Because what happens is little Susie moves from Austin, and she's got her non-GMO vegan sandwiches, and she's a little hippie girl from Austin. And I love them. I got a lot of friends like this. And they moved to Beaumont in East Texas. And she wants to take her two kids hiking. So they go to the Big Thicket Natural Preserve. Don't know about the meth lab I found there.
And
I did a friend's podcast telling a story. He stopped right when I said that, and he laughed. I said, "What's funny?" He goes, "Her name ain't Susie, but she just moved to Beaumont for my company, and she took her kids to where you found the meth lab, the exact unit."
Oh my God! Yeah.
So once again, it's because we had you mentioned COVID. There's 20% more hunters and fishermen in America in every state, and we can't really track.
You couldn't find tackle on the shelf. You couldn't find fishing,
and you can't even really track camping and hiking as much because you don't have to be permitted for that.
Yep.
So it's probably 30-40% more.
Yep.
So new users of the outdoors, more naive probably than people who grew up in it,
less prepared.
Yeah,
less. You know, even the idea of it, like for instance, I'm a herpophile. Love reptiles.
Yeah, me too, man.
Used to go snake hunting by myself. One of the most stupid, idiotic things I could ever freaking do.
I've done it a million times.
I think back on that now, and it's like, you friggin' Momo. But at least I told somebody I was going.
This is
the area I'm going to be at. You don't hear from me in 3 or 4 hours.
Well, that's part of my
looking.
I have a PDF I'll send people.
Yeah.
Of like, these are what I do.
Prep sheet.
And one of them is you have a game plan of where you're going to be in times.
Mm-hmm.
I carry a beacon where I go.
Great.
It's called Spot X, a bunch of them. It's the cheaper one, but it works. And if something happened, all I got to do is hit one button, and my GPS coordinate goes out to every major rescue possible.
Wow.
And it's only like $9 a month to subscribe to it.
And $200 if you're out as much as you are, if you're out camping once a month with your kids,
bam.
You should have something
and
like that.
And you can even text. They got certain texts you can hit too, like, so your family, I'm okay.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
I've got that set up on my phone. Every once in a while, I'll hit the combination, the two buttons at the same time, and my wife will be like, "Oh, you're texting me. You're in trouble."
And growing up a slasher movie fan of the 80s.
Same.
So I came up with one I thought, and I do it, it's called strategic parking.
Because
what happens is they go in this, and usually it was Jason, one of the Friday 13th movies.
Yeah.
They get stuck in the mud trying to back out.
Yeah.
Or they got to. So I always
go down the one way and stay parked that way.
So whatever way I do, I always have my vehicle turned in my retreat position.
Yeah.
But I also, if I know what trail I'm going to go down, I always try to position it where I can see it from at least 50 yards away approaching in case someone's waiting by the vehicle. So that's part of my call strategic parking.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And just little things like that will make a big difference. And another thing is your gut.
How often have you run across other? And I mean, not like somebody with their walking stick.
Yeah.
You know,
how
many times just being out doing what you do in the outdoors, have you run afoul?
Happened twice in Florida last week.
Oh, my God, dude.
In
one week?
In one day in Florida.
Oh, Florida man, what are you doing?
Well, we were on the and what I'm going to talk about, the most dangerous areas are where urban meets forest, because you have the urban criminal element that operates, that wants to do certain criminal elements under cover.
Yeah.
So they'll go off a road somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we ran into. But other than that, I probably had 7 to 8 different situations happen that are beyond a normal encounter with people in the outdoors.
Wow.
Over the years that were literally
that's a lot.
That I walked.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it really is. But you got to realize I spend a lot of time.
Sure, but that's a lot.
But I also spend a lot of time, in these areas that are
like
that
they're
high.
Yeah,
scary. But oh. it's not. You know, I think about it. It's just what I went through. But that's the journey that took me here.
Yeah.
You know, like the thing in California. I'll never forget. You know, a situation where when I was a teenager. You know, we're blood of American males. You take your girlfriend parking on a road somewhere, and then the Phantom Killer shows up. And we pull up, and there's a circle of candles as big as a room, on a slab. And there's a guy in a black cloak running this way. And I had heard rumors of a legitimate bad occult situation. Not like dabblers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm a big Star Wars fan. So when Han Solo hits the hyperspace and Millennium Falcon, that happened with the lights on my vehicle and I went backwards that day. Brother, I didn't know a Ford 83 back then vehicle could go that fast in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was like, so I've had that happen and other things like that. And then I've had a couple of situations where I had to be the cool one. That's what I tell people. Mm. Put your ego at the door.
Yeah.
Come out of the woods alive.
Yeah.
You know, I had a situation with my dad and another guy, and it was really, really wild. And it was about to go to a gun, I thought, with the other guy. And I had to, get my dad mad at me.
to distract
get him out of Dodge.
Guy. Yeah.
So it's been a lot of situations like that. But, you know, the good news is those are fairly rare, unless you're Chester Moore, apparently. There's ways to avoid this and go have an incredible time
absolutely,
in the great outdoors.
Absolutely. That's just it. I want to caveat the fact that we aren't trying to get people from being
in the
outdoors.
No, I want you to be in the outdoors.
We want you to be in the outdoors. We want you to be prepared.
That's it.
To be in the outdoors. And exactly. Much like I try to explain this to you, I work in the convention industry.
Yeah.
Austin, Texas is one of the only convention centers in the country that I've ever seen signs on the inside of the building as you walk out the door. That says, please remove your conference name badge.
Mm.
Think about it.
Yeah.
You are literally making yourself a target. You got a bag of swag.
Yep.
You got a backpack.
Yep.
You're in a suit. You got your
name. That makes sense.
You got expendable corporate money.
Yep.
You got a bag full of loot that you just got. Like, you are making yourself a target for criminals.
Well, I'm glad.
And it's the only city I've ever seen that has that sign.
That's smart. I'm surprised I'm surprised it came out of Austin.
And it's
but
one of those, like, wow. And now, anywhere I go. Before I even leave my room,
you know that
I'm operating, name badge is often in my pocket. And as I walk out, I tell people, like, you may want to remove that name badge as you're walking around Philly.
Yeah. Well,
as you're walking around New Jersey,
You do these conferences and things, and a lot of people in crypto, or they're maybe going to a MUFON conference or whatever it is. I'm going to give you a piece of advice. When you go on expeditions, do not post the location of where you're going. Don't say you're going to do it in this national forest or this where. Put it in a private group and restrict the information, because these people, and I'll be talking about this, are looking for crimes of recognition. They may not get recognized, but their crimes are being recognized.
Yes.
They get to see the reaction to it. So not letting them know where you're going to be focused on something else is something I never do.
Well, and that's just it. Once again, if you're the dude with the backpack walking around looking up at the top of all the buildings, the pickpocket probably knows you may not be shrewd.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're literally giving away the fact that you are bamboozled by what's going on in this big city right now, and now you've made yourself a target.
Exactly. So that's the thing is using wisdom. And you know, and the other part of this is, you know, we got increasing wildlife numbers in America.
And
increasing human numbers. And there's a giant clash coming up with that. And
even when you look at the news coming out of California, I mean, the big puma that was out there recently passed, number 23.
The one that's by the Hollywood sign.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it. Like, a cougar living behind the Hollywood sign.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Chilling. Like my buddy used to live down the road. He'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd see it every once in a while whenever I'd take my trash out.
How cool is that? I want to be in that neighborhood. I'm the only one.
In the middle of L.A. But that's just it. We are encroaching on something that we've never really encroached on like this before.
No, and what we're seeing is some really weird stuff happen, like ungulate populations. So moose numbers are increasing in the Rockies.
Wow.
And elk numbers are just skyrocketed, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, they've been releasing a lot of elk permits across the whole country.
And yeah, you have to because you got to trim the elk in some areas. The problem is this now. People don't realize how defensive a cow elk is, and a cow moose is next level.
One of my most frightening experiences in the world.
Yeah,
I have a 207 area code still. Mm-hmm. Lived in Maine for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of my jobs during the day was a food and beverage manager on a golf course.
So yep.
Mm-hmm. I'd be out until my person came at like 6 a.m. on hole 13 out in the snack shack.
Yeah, yeah.
One foggy morning this time of year, it was literally like pea soup fog. I'm sitting out there waiting for golfers to come by.
Yeah.
And I hear something. And I look up from my book, and there is a cow moose head from me to you.
Whoa.
With her baby on the other side of her head in the window of the snack shack.
Dude.
Looking around. I'm like, how you doing? And you say what you want until you have been that intimately close to a moose. You do not realize how large a moose is. I've killed many a deer in my life, my friend.
But a moose is a different animal.
That head was the size of some of the deer I've killed.
Well, that's become my wife, Lee. We didn't see a moose till like 4 years ago, and it was in Colorado.
Beautiful.
And we photographed. That's become her very favorite animal. And the size of those things, they're magnificent, but they're potentially dangerous. So people got to understand etiquette.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially if you're during that, like, you know, March to, let's say, April to August, September period when that baby's real tight to them, you got to be really careful. Same thing with elk. Yeah. And most people with brain cells will see a grizzly and think, you know, I might want to avoid that.
Not in Yellowstone, apparently.
No, an ungulate, you know, if you got other, you know, they'll go, oh, that's just an elk, brother. That's a 600-pound cow that will stomp you into a mud hole.
Yeah.
I'll never forget being in Yellowstone. And, of course, bison attack more people than anything there. And there was, like, if you go to the Lamar Valley, which is the most awesome area there, there's, like, little parts where they have, like, a concrete area to pull over. You can photograph an area.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was some bison there. And I pulled over to get my camera out and everything. And they were coming along. And they were on the other side of this little barrier. And this woman comes up. I'm going to get my selfie with the bison. I said, you haven't read the signs, woman?
Stay away.
And she's like leaning over like the little barrier spot and trying to get a selfie. I said, well, I'm going to photograph this. I'm going to win the ultimate outdoor writers thing with you've been flung into the air.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and she didn't get, thank God she didn't get hit. I'm just letting you know in advance, I'm photographing your demise.
Yeah.
But people just don't listen. And so it's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it really is, like you said, an etiquette thing. You know, I could have freaked out 98 ways to Sunday. My wisdom of being in the wildlife had been, I need to be as still as possible right now. She would destroy the building I am sitting in if I moved.
On purpose.
Like, she would just wreck shop on this tiny little shanty of a snack shack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
you gotta love it.
That was one of my most frightening wildlife experiences ever. Well, it was like, wow.
It's all about the size, brother. Size matters.
It's just one of those, like, you see them at a distance on the road, all kinds of things. But you don't really expect them to, like, pop their head in next to the Cracker Jacks and be like, what's going on in here?
That's funny.
I smell hot dogs.
Yeah.
It really is about being aware, being ready to go out and do what you're doing, whether you're squatching or whether you're out hunting, fishing, just camping.
Yeah.
Man, I want to thank you for taking the time. I want to have you on again and again and again.
Anytime.
Your ministry is beautiful. And
the fact
that you have brought your ministry to something like Dark Outdoors.
Yeah.
Literally, it is a transformation of your ministry.
Well,
it is.
I appreciate that. And I look at it this way. I shine his light into the darkness.
That's it.
And the beautiful thing about shining light in the darkness is it expels the darkness.
That's right.
And you and I talked about the trafficking issue and things like that last night. The more people who confront it, The more people who talk about these issues, the more lives will be saved. We may not ever know about it, but that's okay. We'll know we did our little part.
Hey, we can solve the mystery later. Yeah. Right now, let's stop the hemorrhage.
And I want to personally thank you for the level of integrity of what you put into your work.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And every time you're doing AV an event, I know we're in good hands, brother.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
I want to thank you so much for your time today. Let everybody know where they can go to follow Higher Calling Wildlife, where they can go to get kids involved, where they can go to follow Dark Outdoors.
So Dark Outdoors is available on every podcasting platform, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, all of it, Amazon. You can go to Higher Calling Wildlife on Facebook or my blog at higher calling.net, and that higher calling.net will connect you with everything. And I'm at TheChesterMoore on Instagram.
Awesome.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Well, hope you have a great Falk Fest.
Here we go.
People have been stopping by. You're up next to speak.
Yes, sir.
While you are online checking out all the amazing work of our good friend Chester Moore and Higher Calling Wildlife as well as Dark Outdoors, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is our website. That is where you can find all the content. We as well are available on all platforms.
Awesome.
You can also tune in live every Tuesday right there at CuriousRealm.com/live. If you have had an experience like what we were just talking about in a state park, national park, public park, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. Share your experience with us. We'll share it with Chester.
That'd be great.
And we'll try to get you some answers, folks. Until next time. Well, not even until next time. Stay tuned for after this break. We will have more coverage of the 2023 Falk Monster Festival coming up live on location right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today
and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back for our final part of coverage here at the 2023 Falk Monster Festival here in Falk, Arkansas. We love coming out to these events. We love coming out, talking to the speakers, talking to literally the people here. I don't know if we would, I don't know if I could go through one of these events here at Bigfoot Central without having you on the show. So welcome back, Daniel Allen Jones from the Vortex, everybody.
Hey, Christopher, great to be back here once again. Always in great seeing you, Arkansas. Buddy.
Yeah, yeah. It's we're at a new venue. It's fantastic. Great to see a larger crowd able to be serviced, and great to see a show like this be able to grow and reach new audiences. We had a ton. As opposed to last year, we had a ton of kids here this year, younger, like junior high age kids. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, I think so. It's really cool to also see that it's in a school. You know, I think it's not something that's probably easy for other school buildings to be able to use for things outside of their own programs. Yeah. And here in Falk, you know, this is something that's become integrated in the history of the town. And I think it's fun for people, not just, people coming out from wherever they are, you know, venturing from, but the locals here to know that we have an annual festival. We can celebrate. We can get all the, you know, people that make wares and goods and crafts and things together, have the kids come out to talk about some strange history and some, you know, fun ideas that may help them get out into nature and explore these possibilities. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and it's like Jeff Crypto Hulk Stewart said in the Q&A just a few minutes ago, just the fact of it's the camaraderie. It's the fact of being around people of like mind and being able to swap stories, share stories, standing here in the hall and just hearing people share unabashedly what their experience is. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It really is. It's one of the only communities where I don't see people snitting at each other and like infighting, so to speak, and like, oh, yeah, you know, this. There really is a support for each other's experiences that I don't see in a lot of other communities that I support shows for. Nothing wrong with it. I just find that the cryptid community in specific is really, I think, together in that way. Like, very much like we're out in the woods together. Like, we're in the thick of it together with this.
I think so. And there are some, you know, different opinions and stances on, various ideas of what's going on with Bigfoot or these other creatures or cryptids, you know, and I think that that's understandable. You kind of have that issue with any of these interesting subjects. But the main thing is that everyone's curious about what's going on and whether they're out there to try to prove it or disprove it or debunk it. Everyone's trying to make sense of what's sure. happening out in this world that we all live in together. And we want to make sense of not only how it affects us, but maybe if there are creatures out there, whether it's Bigfoot or any number of these other mystery animals or anything else, that we have to also acknowledge that, as you know, they discussed on the panel, that if we make any discoveries and we declare that to the world, it's not just fun for us to learn about new stuff. That's great and all, but it also affects how they are going to be, you know, affected with announcing that to the world.
How conservancy happens, how it affects so many things, how forestry happens, everything.
Right.
And that's just it. The impact of it is so much more than just, well, here it is.
Right.
Yeah, it's not just like finding of a compound and, well, there's your compound. It impacts a lot. It impacts a lot socially. It impacts a lot government-wise, things like that. So, yeah, and a prime example that we've been talking about a lot lately is just the change of conversations with UFO UAP and the fact that here in the last 2 years, we now have an annual federal UFO UAP report. Never happened before. Now we have a funded report. We want updates every year. What's going on? We now have a unified reporting system. Aside from MUFON, that never existed. There was never like a, here is the unified way to report. If a United Airlines pilot reported it, A, you probably lost your job. B, their system of reporting it was totally different than American Airlines or Delta or what the Navy did or what Air Force pilots did.
Yeah.
Now there is a unified means to get data. And when you're talking about just stabbing in the dark at data, there's nothing scientific about that. You can glean nothing scientific from it. So to have the unified system of reporting, now you have a means of classification of data. Now you have a means of, like, these cases are more important than this. These tend to be the trends. Even the fact that there's, I was talking with somebody earlier, the fact that there's no map of tracks that have been found. Why is there not an interactive GPS map of tracks that have been found? Even at that point, you would be able to, from an overhead point of view, if you had them all GPS pointed, you'd be able to go, hey, look, here's a trail that they seem to be following. Like,
right.
Just that data alone would open up a whole new realm of study, literally yeah. into a cryptid species.
Well, I think you made a good point. I mean, a lot of people... Sometimes when you talk about UFOs and then Bigfoot, there's a lot of discrepancy in how those two ideas relate. But yeah. aside from that issue of are Bigfoot and UFOs related at all, if you just step outside of that and just say, if you look at how the issue of reporting the phenomena, reporting these ideas yeah. that people are experiencing encounters and seeing things, whether they are UFOs or whether they think they're Bigfoot or whatever, Sasquatch, whatever it is, if there is some kind of way that people can utilize a system like you're saying that's yeah. going on for the recent UAP activity with the government, if they had an opportunity to do that with Bigfoot, it might allow us to have a little bit more structure in the reporting system, because there are organizations out there that, like UFO groups, have been doing this for a long yeah. time, but they're pretty much just independent, or they're backed by people who have gotten together to try to make sense out of all this on their own.
And that's just it. A lot of people, you're involved in a lot of the same communities I am. A lot of people in these communities are very upset with MUFON because they will not accept their evidence. Unfortunately, when MUFON started, their scientific protocol was witness statements. If you did not witness it, we have no evidence. So that's where their scientific process begins, is with the witness. So unfortunately, if your Ring camera caught it, that doesn't mean you witnessed it. You caught something, but it doesn't make you a witness.
Right.
And a lot of people get upset about that. But when you're talking a scientific definition of evidence and an evidentiary process, it is important to put that out first front forward.
I think so. And, one of the things you can see, and I presented on this recently a few weeks back at another yeah. event, that there are parallels to what you just see.
Absolutely.
What you kind of find in the reporting process of both
yeah.
the idea of UFO encounters and cryptid or Bigfoot encounters. Not to say that those two things are directly related. Some people might say they are. But aside from that idea, the working process that someone would go through to in an attempt to research and investigate the case files and the data that is available does have a lot of similar input. Yeah. You have to talk to witnesses who, you know, just as you just mentioned, you know, sometimes not only experience something that may seem, you know, to them very compelling, but they might see something, hear something, maybe they'll smell something. They might have a sensation.
Yeah, physical sensation.
And all of these things you can see also in the world of Bigfoot. The whole idea with Bigfoot is that some people say, well, I might have seen something. I might have heard something. You know, they might have gotten a sense of, you know, looking at something that could have potentially been constructed by a creature. And I think that if you look at all of these different things, some people, they might not have claimed to see one directly or see Bigfoot and encounter it that way. But because of the circumstance around whatever they think happened, they feel strongly that that's what it was. Whether they heard a vocalization, they heard a wood knock, they saw structures, they saw what they interpret as some kind of form of communication or gifting or whatever it is. And I think that all of these different things that people describe build a very interesting sort of conglomerate of anecdotal evidence that you can take into at least two major situations. A court of law where a jury might be susceptible to data and might not always, you know, choose the actual outcome, but they can be persuaded by certain
things. That's
right. The other would be basically take it into a lab setting where you have to be able to demonstrate it in a certain way. And that's different than in a court of law where you have people who can be persuaded and susceptible to that.
It's interesting that you say that because I've had Tobe Johnson and, oh my God, his name just left my head, the creators of Flash of Beauty, Bigfoot Revealed. And one of Tobe's previous projects that he's still working on is the Owl Laboratory. And it was basically a bunch of kind of paranormal Sasquatch parallel things that were happening that he, just like you said, started taking these things like gifting. Okay, let's take it out into the woods and put it into a laboratory setting. And let's start leaving gifts and chronicling what happens in this one spot where gifts are left. Things like that. So seeing somebody like that who's actively taking the concept of a lab practice, let's take this on a concept of we're going to experiment, take the data, call down another experiment, and repeat the experiment, and keep doing it. Some of the information that they've gotten is really remarkable. Owl Moon Lab, check it out, Tobe Johnson. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
Well, that sounds interesting. I think that it's just one of those things where a lot of times that seems to be a really important part of the process of getting information. Yep. But one of the things that we find that happens within the community of those interested in these things is that that really doesn't happen as much as maybe people feeling convinced by charisma, by stories, by the idea that maybe it's almost in some way a faith-based concept. They don't necessarily have to see the physical proof, but if you sound and seem sincere enough, then they'll say, "I believe you." Well, and that's one of the challenges, but also it's a double-edged sword.
It
in
is.
Some way.
It is, and you've heard me say it. I've said it to you. I say it on the show all the time. The whole reason I do this show is because I have had experiences. Like my path of spiritual exploration came about because of a religious experience I had in the middle of Mass. None of the other hundreds of people there on that Sunday had that, felt that presence, saw that light. None of them. But I did. That was unquantifiable to anybody else.
Yeah.
But it changed my life. It changed my life. And that is utterly a matter of faith. There is zero evidence to that. Nobody else witnessed it. I talked to the priest who was up in the middle of everybody. He's like, "I didn't see what you were talking about." But if that's what you felt, Chris, you might want to explore that. You may want to check into that. And it took an open-hearted, open-minded priest telling this altar server that, you know, if that's the experience that you just had at the altar, you should explore that. You should venture forth into that. And that's a hard, even now, I'm getting kind of choked up because it's a hard road trying to find a truth, trying to find your truth, period. Yeah. And a lot of this, man, when they are life-changing experiences. They're life-changing.
It's amazing, and it's good that maybe, and in some way, he was encouraging of you to consider that
yeah.
rather than the opposite and saying, well, that didn't happen, and that's yeah. just yeah. you
or,
know, whatever else.
Man, you know, I don't know, wearing this collar, like, you ready for 9 years minimum before you get a collar? You cool? Like,
yeah.
there were a lot of things he could have done other than encourage me.
Yeah.
And other than listen to that moment and listen to my experience and just accept the experience for what it was, not try to justify, not try to. And we're in an interesting place in our society because, yes, in one part, Daniel, we are dealing with confirmation of belief. We all want confirmation of what we believe, period. We all want to know that, like, A, we're not crazy. Doesn't matter. Even my religious experience, I wanted to know I wasn't crazy, that I wasn't the only one that felt something like that in that room. But at the same token, man, as a society, we are dealing with a confirmation bias
right
out the wazoo. And the fact of when presented with heaps of beyond anecdotal, actual factual evidence, people are willing to put that aside, and don't get me wrong, still have your belief, which is a beautiful thing. But it, on a flip side, it can also mess up a lot of the science.
Yeah.
And a lot of the hard boots on the ground research
yeah,
that's being done. And it muddies that water.
I think so. I mean, you just made a good point. I think it's part of the human condition. I don't know that we can ever get around having a sense of our own, not just individual outlook on a situation, whether that, you know, is as a sort of a thought, a feeling, a belief, a worldview, all of that as individuals, but also as a social group, a collective. And in a greater sense, you can see that it's like what you said, confirmation bias is a big part about how I think certain cultural groups can either work together towards something, whether they're developing in a way that seems constructive or not. They're doing something in some sense to help reassure themselves of that notion, whatever it is that they've come across, in the sense that, like, let's say you just mentioned having a belief regardless of what the science
says
or the data, the facts, any of that. And I think that with how people present information, it can be incredibly articulated and just and done in such a way that you'd think it'd convince anyone. But that's not always the case, because even though it's like, wow, that sounds really interesting, and maybe I'll change my mind a little bit, I might still hold on to that, you know, whatever it is. And I think a lot of people are in that place to where, in our own sense of worldview, we still cling to those ideas in a way that, you know, we as ancient people have always had with us. And I
Absolutely.
Think that that's something that really will be integrated with us as we continue to go into the future. And it'd be hard probably to get out of that.
A prime example is the recent NASA study here in the last year, where they put forth another study about what could be the possible implications. And a lot of the headlines were like, NASA hires 12 theologians. And it's like, well, you know, they brought some theologians in to conceptually talk about the philosophic impact to mankind.
Right.
Yeah, if you're going to talk about something that's going to literally shake the foundations of mankind, history as we know it, science as we know it, everything, if it's that 3% that it might be, you got to talk to somebody that are used to dealing with things that are beyond reality, man. You got to talk to people that are ready to tackle that paradigm shift that happens and that people crisis deal with regularly when it comes to faith.
Well, you know, I think that one thing that we've talked about on multiple you know, shows that we've done is that not only is it something that, you know, a lot of people in these communities already are, they're already discussing these ideas. They're already trying to understand what's going on with the community. But aside from that, just people that aren't really into this or they're indifferent, they don't really know anything about it, they rely on a lot of the mainstream media sources, all the things that most people kind of look at in a way that tells them what's going on in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
As a way to think or say, well, I guess I can, you know, add that to my standard of what I believe to be true or how I construct my reality. Sure. If they heard it from some guy down the street who said, hey, I saw a UFO, or hey, I saw a Bigfoot back in the woods, they'd say, you're crazy. But the moment that someone on the news comes out and said, that UFO that was over there, it was real, or that Bigfoot was in the woods, that's real too. They'll say, okay, now I believe it. And the thing that I want to make a point about is that I think that it's something that we as a society have to try to come to terms with, is that in this group, you know, a lot of times it's preaching to the choir, but it has to be done in a way also that helps to elevate the standard of awareness in society to a new place to where it's not really just reiterating the same thing between the same people, but it has to be shown that, as you just mentioned, with something like the NASA study, which is coming up in a month or two, they're supposed to finish up this study that cost $100,000, not really a lot of money. But the interesting thing to think is that if whatever they do and they come out with results, if they decide to publish anything, despite people for decades talking about this and with strong sense of direction of credibility and all of this stuff, despite all of that, you'll still have people say, no, it's all nonsense. Yep. But until NASA says something about it, they'll say, well, now I'm a believer because NASA said so. So until we have someone...
Now that the other 90% has okayed this 5%, I'm cool with the 5%.
Yeah, because everyone else that's been saying it all the whole time, is going to say, I feel maybe vindicated or not. But the thing is that it's just one of those weird situations where it's like, people have been saying this for years, but it has to be, sometimes those big names and recognizable things in society that people know to feel like I can feel a confirmation at that point.
Yeah, I feel okay with accepting this knowledge from this source. And Jeff Crypto Hulk Stewart and I were talking earlier about the fact of, and as a former law enforcement officer, he was like, one of the things I asked a training officer one time in a training was, how come we accept the evidence from this female person over here because they're a judge or a lawyer or a police officer? And we will believe what they say by 98th percentile. But this person over here who works at the drugstore or works at the package shop selling liquor during the day and says the exact same thing, we don't believe them at all. We have no anecdotal evidence to say that this person that works at the liquor store is any less viable than that lawyer, that judge, that minister, who you consider a person of impeccable stature in the community and a trustable source of truth. There's no deal, like, by all standards of the justice system. Is that person not innocent until proven guilty? So shouldn't you believe them until proven otherwise?
Right.
Just curious.
No, I mean, I think you just said it. It's just one of those things where in society we rely heavily upon positions of authority to give us, a sense of what's going on.
Sure.
And it just is a challenge that I think we all face, is that everyone kind of enters in, I think, level playing in the playing field, just very level. But that's not really the case, because in society we rely upon government officials and law enforcement and judges and people that have some kind of a say in societal things. And that isn't really just me looking at it that way, but I think that the most part, people look at that type of situation a lot and rely on those credible sources rather than just some guy or some person who doesn't have any notoriety or have any basis for an official stance. And I think that that's where we find ourselves having a lot of challenge with trying to give, other people an opportunity who otherwise we have no reason to, but no reason really not to, like you said, that we don't know why we shouldn't
believe them. Do you know them to be a liar? Just curious,
Right.
And that's why, like I said, because of my experiences, I will always choose to believe the experiencer until proven otherwise. And I am a believer's believer, but I am also a skeptic at heart. And I look at things scientifically. I try to look at things as dispassionately as possible and remove my emotion from the decision. Because what I believe holds no weight to evidence. It's either evidence or it's not.
Right.
And I don't know, it's one of those, as someone who for the last 25, 30 years of my life has spent either editing audio, video, shooting. I've either spent it behind a lens or behind a microphone. So, yeah, I'm sorry if I can spot a lot of anomalies that pop up. I'm sorry if I break a lot of hearts. But my job as a skeptic isn't to do that. My job as a skeptic is to have my mind changed.
Yeah.
My job as a skeptic is to keep, despite what I believe, to keep allowing data to come through my filter dispassionately and go, ooh, well, that totally changes the way I interpret that.
Right.
Wow, my mind's changed. That's the job of a skeptic.
Yeah.
Literally. and once again, we look at it differently as society, as a skeptic is here to take somebody's idea and just poke holes in it. It's like, no, no.
Yeah.
You're looking at it in the wrong way, and because you're looking at it in the wrong way, we're literally having a problem in a scientific wall here.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things, too, where, you know, the idea of skepticism gets a bad rap. I consider myself skeptical.
I consider you very skeptical.
not in a disregarding sense. No, no. But because, you know, and we're on Curious Realm, it makes me curious to wonder what's really going on. If these people and these situations and this all of this history shows us very specific things, patterns, data that we can maybe try to, you know, find ways to, you know, get answers to, I think that that should make anyone skeptical, not in a disregarding way or just a dismissive way, but to question further, to be more curious.
A piqued interest way. Yeah. It should be like, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't realize that. Show me what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and it should be a piqued interest, not a, well, no. Like a shut door, and that's just it. Like that's the whole reason I started this show. Even the iteration of this show before this was, it's the conversation. I don't care if we agree intrinsically whatsoever. The important thing, Daniel, is that we talked.
Right.
That I open-mindedly listen to what you believe and why you believe it and leave it at that. I don't care if it changes what I believe. I genuinely, as a human being, want to know what you believe and why you believe it. And leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's have a conversation about humanity and us and where we're at. And without these deep topics, it's not going to happen. You know?
I mean, I think it's one of those, it's part of how we grow as a society and our outlooks. We can't all see and think and explain things the same, and I think that that's, you know, one of the things that we face in a lot of these different topics and communities, especially with Bigfoot, because you know I think that, and it's not just that, you mentioned UFOs as well.
Sure.
We would be naive to think that there aren't you know, a lot of times where people aren't just being disingenuous, but they just maybe they do mean well, but they just aren't very good at identifying things, or they're not very good at assembling having a recollection that is very coherent. They try to remember something the best they can, and it's not they're intentionally lying, but maybe they did have something happen, or maybe they didn't. That should be something I think should allow people to see that, yes, we do know that sometimes that happens, but at the same time, that we do know, unfortunately, that there are people who try to do what they can to take advantage of people. And I think that also is another reason, not the only reason, but it's another reason for my own personal skepticism, because I know that it's important to be to use discernment with any of this stuff, because not only is it interesting, it's fascinating, it makes me curious, but I also have to make sure that I'm not just being so open that I'm believing everything I hear everyone say, because I think that's one of the things that makes us feel very confused later on. It's that want
of confirmation.
Because you hear mixed things, and you suddenly hear, well, I thought this was real, and this is this other person saying this too, and now I'm feeling mixed in how that works. And it's really because I think people are excited. They're anticipating what they're hearing because it feels right to them. And I think that that's where you said a moment ago, it's like when you start kind of getting your emotions involved, you have to be very careful depending on someone's involvement. Like my involvement might be different than someone else's involvement. Someone might be just you know, enjoying this as an enthusiast.
Sure.
If you're a researcher or an investigator, you might have a different set of standards to adhere to when you're trying to collect data or do research in a way that you're not letting your emotions get the best of you. But like you said, just kind of look at it dispassionately.
Yeah.
And everyone's got a different approach. And I think that's what makes this a very interesting diverse field and community, not just with, you know, cryptozoology within the Bigfoot community, but things like UFOs and all these other strange, interesting topics that bring us all together. So there is unity to it, but there is a lot of stratification. I think that, like you're saying, we look past the differences. We can be civil. We can have discourse and keep the conversation going. I think that adds momentum and in some way can help provide a sense of support with people who otherwise wouldn't want to share anything.
Exactly. And that's just it. That's that I think right now societally is what's happening, is the conversation is being had. And because of things like the UFO UAP panels, the now annual report, it's okay to say something.
Yeah.
It's okay to say something. It wasn't okay to say something before. It didn't matter if you were Air Force, United Airlines, U.S. Navy. It was not okay to say something, Daniel. We paid millions of dollars to train you to be the observer and to use the billions of dollars. Like, each plane is $1.6 billion. That's a B, dude. I don't care what car you have and know how to drive. You do not know how to fly a plane like that, all right? That dude has millions of dollars of training put into him to fly that billion-dollar instrument.
Yeah.
And operate it and know everything integrally about it and how it works and how it operates. And when he comes back and says, yo, there was some weird stuff going on, suddenly he's not a million-dollar piece of equipment anymore. You know, like, that's mind-numbing to me. But that was literally the situation we were in. It was not okay to talk about it. But once it is, it was amazing to see how fast the first questions at the UAP panel were called together for MUFON stuff. It was amazing to see how fast a panel happened to get a unified reporting system done amongst branches of the military and civilian services. Now it doesn't matter if you're an American Airlines pilot or a U.S. Navy pilot. You are directed to the same alphabet agency and you will be given the same form to fill out. So it's no longer a random swath of data that they're going to get, maybe, if this dude wants to report it. Now they're encouraged to report it, and there's a standardization to the reporting, which means now we can actually call data.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's exciting. I think it's important to pay attention. A lot of people look at it one way or the other. They might see it as some sort of disclosure narrative, or they might see it as the government really trying to pick up the pieces of legacy programs that have gone back decades.
I've said it numerous times on my show. The only way you get the money back from the technology you invested in is to declassify it and put it on a shelf.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the only way, dude.
I think that it's
the only way.
It's tough to see how something like this will, when it comes to UFOs, be brought out in a way that isn't, you know, from the government, going to be something that will be an attempt at funding something. And I think that when I say that, the modern iteration of this with ARRO, which is AARO, it's the
aerial anomaly.
All domain. It's the all domain anomaly resolution office. So, and that's a big umbrella department for not just all the super weird exotic UFOs, but all the more conventional things that just aren't readily identifiable, like these balloons. But they recently said,
and USOs.
Yeah, I mean, all these things. And so transmedium and all, you know, air, water, space, who knows? You know, all these different really interesting things. What's really interesting now is that there have been questions with what this group, ARRO, is able to do with their current funding status, with their current clearance status, and the authorizations they need to be able to go into interagency, which is going into, like you're saying, all these different whatever alphabet agency, whatever military branch they need to try to work with. I would love to see something like that work with the idea of Bigfoot or with cryptids,
in
the sense that if ever there was, you know, a push to get this far as, you know, as UFOs have, as far as the government releases all this, it would make me wonder. We probably don't have there are reports that go back and people have kept track in different ways, but there's probably not an official unified database. Maybe there's something. Some people talk about, like you said, the Department of Forestry and all these
things. There may be some things where there are some cases called together. May be, and don't get me wrong, there are people like the, you know, Texas Bigfoot Research Organization, people like that who have been gathering witness statements, stuff like that. But once again, was there a protocol followed? Was there, like, here is your form.
Yeah.
Because if you go to MUFON, like, there is a form that you fill out for your sighting.
Yeah, I think it would be something helpful in the same regard. Absolutely. If there was a process, but not only that, and there are, obviously you can go to, as you just mentioned, many of these different groups, submit a report, and they might have their own way to try to compile that data for whatever reason, too. That's the other thing, is it's like you can submit a report, but ultimately you might not get much back, and it makes you wonder what exactly are they going to do with that information.
Yeah.
But if there was some effort on behalf of the government, whether it's park and wildlife, fishing game, or doing something on behalf of conservancy and all of these different things that we see happening in parks and national and state parks and things that, you know, try to make sense of what they know that they have as far as wildlife and making sure that people aren't just out there, you know, gunning things down at will.
Yeah.
And doing the best they can with rangers and the park people. I think that obviously, as we heard in the panel earlier, once something like Bigfoot were to be announced, if it was to be just said, we discovered it, it's real, it would be, you know,
would
a
you
lot
be ready,
to work with.
Would you be ready for a third of our national parks to maybe be inaccessible?
It would be a big challenge. I think they'd have to reconsider a lot of how to make sense of,
because
okay, we have this real issue to deal
you
with
have
now.
To remember, even places like Yellowstone, there's a good percentage of the park that is not accessible to the public, you know, because, like, that's where the animals go breed. Like,
yeah,
that's not where they come and just, like, cross through and there's a picture spot where you can take a picture of the bison crossing the road. Like, that's where they go breed. They're not going to let you go hang out near where the bison breed because you're going to freak out the bison and they're not going to breed, you know? So once that conservancy happens and you're like, well, we have an American wood ape now. We have to conserve it. We know this is its general range. Yeah, get ready for that area to possibly be locked down to a lot of things.
Yeah.
Hunting, fishing, all kinds of stuff, because now you're talking, that's their forage range. You can't go pick berries there anymore. You can't go pick morel mushrooms there anymore. That's what they eat.
The other thing could be, you know, just like this group Arrow is doing for UFOs, you know, it serves as a catch-all for not just alien spaceships, but anything that we're trying to figure out what's going on up there or in the water.
Once again, that unidentified. Like, that's a swath when you say unidentified flying object. And we've said it numerous times on the show together. Let's just leave it at that. Let's start with just that definition and let's leave it at, here's something in the sky that we don't know what it is. Now let's start.
Yeah. Well, you know, if in the same thing, you know, we have people saying Bigfoot as if it's this one thing, and we really don't know if it's a set species or a set of subspecies of known groups. And that's the challenge, is it's kind of like if we had an arrow for Bigfoot, it could help show us that, you know, so-and-so saw this and it had this morphology. It was described as this shade, this color, this height, these dimensions.
Exactly.
This other one, you know, you can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah.
It makes a little bit more of a possibility that if we're getting a wide variety of descriptions and reports, we might not be dealing with the same exact thing. It could be several different things, and
several subspecies,
you know, could be new species.
Well, much like in the Q&A when they were like, "Why the large gap in range?" It's like that all depends on available food, breeding areas, things like that. You know, like Chester Moore said. Go down near Mexico and the Texas border, and you'll find these turkeys all over the place. And then there's a gap, and then they pick up again. In theory, yeah, they should be ranging right there in between the two areas too, but they're not.
Yeah.
We don't know why. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of range, plenty of breeding area. We don't know why they're not nesting there. They just tend to skip over it.
Yeah, and it could help us understand that, you know, it doesn't mean that if one big story, and this might upset some people, but if they go back and they say, well, you know, this hypothetical Bigfoot group, you know, that's trying to figure this stuff out, like Arrow is for the government with UAP and all that, UFOs, if they had this kind of group go back and they use all this super high-tech stuff and they go and analyze the Patterson-Gimlin film and they say, you know what, this is the one big thing that everyone tries to say, and we determined that it's a fake. If this happens, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of Bigfoot's not real or fake.
That.
It might just mean
that.
But that would still shake a lot of people and their sense of, wow, I was so convinced. Now I don't really know what to think.
And
so,
granted, had the conversation with King Gerhardt on the show regularly, the fact of he's the same way as me. I don't think video evidence is going to do it. I don't think a picture is going to do it. I don't think it's going to do it with UFOs, UAPs. I don't think it's going to do it with ghosts. That's not going to be the evidence that is the bell ringer.
Right. It's one of those challenges between a courtroom with a jury or a lab with, you know, demonstrable, repeatable things, because you could show all of that footage to a courtroom full of people and they'll say,
utterly,
you know,
convince
what?
Them. That's, you could utterly
that's amazing.
Convince them.
And it could be all faked. And they could still fall for it. And that happens in court sometimes.
Prime example, right now in our society, there is a major artist that just refused a photography award because he literally took the subject material of the award, like, take a picture of this, and the best picture wins. He made this beautiful picture, amazing, everything else. He refused his own award because he came out and told them that he purposefully AI generated it.
Oh, wow. And that's a new thing.
He did not
too,
take the picture, not an actual picture. So that's what we're up against.
Yeah.
They literally, like, these are a bunch of photographers. These are people who take pictures for a living and judge pictures and everything
they
else. They couldn't tell it was fake.
Wow.
He was honest. He could have totally won that award, kept it on his shelf, and been that winner for all eternity.
Yeah.
But he blew out the system and said, hey, just so you know, I faked that. So watch it.
Yeah. I think it's tough to do that because and a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, shame on you for doing that. But way, it's like it's a big eye-opener.
He's laying it open.
Yeah.
He's flaying the steak open and going, look at how the sausage is made.
Right. It's a reality
because
that
this
we're
is
dealing
what we're
with.
Up against. And whenever the Adobe software came out 5-6 years ago, where if you had 20 minutes of somebody talking, you could literally type whatever you wanted. And I want to say it was Jordan Peele that they had up on stage. And they took like part of a podcast interview from him and literally made him where he was talking about his dog and how much he loved his dog. I always kiss my dog before I leave and this and that. And then they literally on screen typed out a sentence. And Jordan Peele's voice said it.
Oh.
In the exact inflection, in the exact way that he speaks.
Yeah.
And that was 5-6 years ago, and they needed 20 minutes of somebody. Now, whenever this happened, I was like, this is going to change Hollywood contracts. It's going to change everything. You now have James Earl Jones, who sold rights in perpetuity to his voice. So now he said, okay, you want to use my voice? You're giving money to my family. And you can use James Earl Jones 35 years from now and have him read your script for Lion King 38.
It's interesting how that changes,
whatever,
you know, how things work.
But it's the fact of, that was going to change Hollywood contracts, man, because you could literally have Marlon Brando star in a movie. Like, you could write a whole part for Marlon Brando and have him star in it right now, and the man's been dead for 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's freaky. That's freaky, but that is literally the technology that we're dealing with right now.
And it's just in the last few years, and that's, you know, we've talked a little bit, you know, in times past about the idea of Moore's Law and technology and improving over time.
Yeah.
And even that, the idea of how it's improving changes, because with this, you know, a lot of the AI improvements, even in just like last year, it's hard to see how this will exponentially grow and improve or alter not only how things work with, like you just said, media contracts, all of that, but how we have to try to make sense of all this other stuff that's already very difficult to sift through and find.
We've already got clogged information filters trying to sieve all this stuff. Now you add in the concept of actual deep fakes, not even like, here's some, maybe this could be done. Like, no, dude, any kid in this junior high with a laptop at home could do that. Literally. And the prime example is the Superman movie that came out a few years ago, where a fan went and made the 5 o'clock shadow of Superman disappear better than the Hollywood studios did. Like, he went in and fixed Henry Cavill's 5 o'clock shadow. And he was like, why couldn't y'all do this? I did this on my home computer.
Right. And it just makes you wonder, you know, with how accessible all that stuff is, how it's going to play a part into trying, you know, having researchers and people that are already working on this, all of these challenges and problems, to try to know that now there's this other layer, and we have to try to figure out how do we allow this to, you know, not muddy up the waters, like you said earlier, but also, you know, make us realize that it's not only something that's going to be available for anybody, kids, but maybe in the same way that it's going to provide challenges for us, we can use it at the same time to help see what we can do to allow it to still be a tool, you know, and improve that way too. I think that AI can be very helpful and also very difficult. It's another one of those double-edged swords.
You know, it's really one of those also, Daniel, when you're talking about sifting and going through the information, first thing that pops in the head is like gold mining. You find a miner who's been panning for 30, 40 years. He incrementally finds more because he knows what other material that he may be slewing out that he could actually re-slew and reprocess and get more out of.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you kind of learn along the way ways to reprocess information, ways to relook at information, and ways to go, well, though this may look like a worthless chunk, let's polish over here and let's flip it and look at it this way, you know, or let's process it in this way. And now we can get a totally different valuable ore out of it. You know, like that may be copper bearing instead of gold bearing, though we're looking for gold. Put it aside. We can still, you know, ore that out later.
Yeah.
You know, but that takes experience. That takes somebody who's literally been sifting for years to know, no, don't put a whole handful inside your sifting pan. You want half a handful so you can get more water in there and clean it out properly so that there's not so much dirt. More water, less dirt, that kind of stuff.
I'm hopeful that if in some way AI continues to improve, that not only is it going to make things difficult for us in this way, but it might be able to help us identify those things.
Yes.
Where are those chunks?
Where are those patterns? Yeah. Once again, if you're talking about things like footprints, if you're talking about DNA trails, if you're talking about just traveled trails, if you're talking about tree structures, all those things would be in a localized pattern, same way as bear scat, same way as deer tracks, no different, same way as a human being going to the freaking grocery store and buying Cheetos, man.
Yeah.
Like, guaranteed, you take the same path to the store that you buy Cheetos at. You ever think about that? Do you take a different route to work?
I mean, I think that
we're creatures of habit,
right? I think
by nature.
It's one of those things where, with how advanced even now, you know, a lot of these AI programs are, it can detect things in a way that, you know, it might take people, the organics, you know, time to try to figure out and look at and say, oh, wow, you know, I've been trying to solve this for years.
You need to coin that term rapidly before the machine picks it up and coins it for you.
I think that it's just one of those things where it's like it'll detect those patterns much more efficiently than where most of us are probably able to.
Yes.
And it's not to say that it's one or the other, but I think that we can have a way to work together.
It dispassionately looks at it.
Yeah.
It dispassionately looks at it. And if it takes an AI to be dispassionate, then let's consider it that. Let's consider it the dispassionate scalpel for information.
As long as
once it hits a certain level, let's give it to the AI.
And
let's see what it does with it.
It's also the issue of, you know, people that are using it, putting information in, they're inputting a sense of bias that while the AI itself may not be biased, maybe it can be eventually, I guess, but it's an idea
that can.
The information that's going into it is provided by that user who already has a sense of what they're wanting their
example
program to do.
Would be Tay by Microsoft, the junior high age, like 12, 13-year-old young lady who was on Twitter that was an AI bot.
Oh, okay. Well,
that within about 3 weeks had the intelligence of about a 20-year-old and became a raving racist.
Well,
because of the dialogue through Twitter that was fed to her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's, there you
prime
go.
Prime example. I mean,
it's
it became weighed one way or the other because of the data it was given, because input.
And I think
Johnny Five would say
it's one of those things where, you know, if you start making that type of technology that's pliable like that, you're going to have that as a
possibility.
Difficult thing. If there's no way to alter its I mean, you want it to be able to work well and efficiently, and I think there are ways to do that without incorporating bias. But obviously, if it's interacting with real people on a regular basis,
it's going to pick it up.
Yeah,
it's going to pick it up, and it has to learn how to spot. Well, this point of data may be a bias because of this word set.
Yeah,
what have you?
Otherwise, it's going to become so disproportionate that eventually it's going to say, "Well, sorry, sorry, organics. We've determined that the data that we've concluded with whatever we're working on is beyond your current capacity of understanding."
Well, and that is no different than a good investigator, a good detective, being able to read somebody in a room. No different. No different. They're giving you passionately a story, things like that, but that detective dispassionately, being disconnected from things, can read that, can judge it against past situations that were similar. Let's look at the similar threads here. And, hey, dispassionately, I think the dude did it. Just by my past experiences of people that are guilty, everything else, this is what I'm judging it on. Not because I know the guy from third grade and I don't like him.
Yeah.
Or because he works at the package store and I don't trust what he says. You know, it's because they are trained observers that are trained to filter through immediate data like that. They're trained to see micromuscular movements in the face that may tell that you're lying. That kind of that may think, oh, it looks like he's kind of trying to think of something to say instead of just responding.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff that the average person, much like the AI, can filter all that out. The average person wouldn't be able to. The detective can. But the average person hearing that story can't.
Well, and to kind of come back a little bit with how this could relate to, you know, what we're doing here at like an event here and Falk with cryptids and Bigfoot, if in some way, and we've seen this happen a little bit recently, is if you take something like the Patterson-Gimlin film and you feed it into an AI program, which is an attempting, it might attempt to enhance it or understand it or try to do something, you know, that film can only be enhanced so much.
Yeah.
Once you're doing things like adding artifacts, you're altering the original film. And I think that's one of the challenges people see is they see this close-up, blown-up artwork of facial features and things. And I wonder how much of that is artificially generated or how much of it can actually realistically be pulled from what we're working with a very old, grainy film.
Granted, grainy film, things like that. However, I will posit this because I belong to a lot of nerd groups when it comes to AV. And yeah, I hear a lot of content creators like, how are they doing all these 4K upgrades of old film movies? It's like, well, I don't think you realize the fact that a 35 millimeter film frame captures more data than 4K. The projector just couldn't get it out. So those 4K re-reels that you're seeing are actually, like, all that resolution was there. So if he was shooting on a 16 millimeter, that would be 2K equivalent. So you could upgrade that to 2K and be adding zero artifacts.
Well, I would hope so. And I know that there are some that do add artifacts, and I'd like to think there are some that aren't, which are enhancing it. They're augmenting its quality of what we see in the playback from whatever medium.
Yeah.
Because you have to also keep in account that it's like so many
compression
people,
ratios and blocking and pixelization, things like that. But if you're talking a pixel by pixel ratio.
Yeah.
And like, how are they taking this 35 millimeter movie from 1980 and making it 4K now?
Right.
And it doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's because that information is already in that 35 millimeter film. We just weren't able to get all of the color scheme because of the existing projectors.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Well, so I hope that it can help us.
Our technology is catching up to the analog technology that literally existed in the day of Bob Gimlin. And it's wild because, like that resolution was there. We just weren't able to capture it. And the real problem is now that thing's been run through so many times, how many artifacts have been added?
Right.
By heat and things like that, that now can't be drawn out.
If there's something that AI can do to help with that, I would only like to think that maybe it could help point out those things.
Exactly.
Like, you might not have known that this was added. This is not an original, place in the movie or the film, you know. And so I think it's one of those things where I hope that it can help us with those things, with historic and archival information, but also moving forward in the way of, like you just said, you know, any film, video, movies, footage, photography that is an attempt to show something.
That's
that
right.
Maybe you can look at it, and it might, I mean, we need to not only rely on it alone, but I think to use it as a tool that shows here are the reasons why this is potentially real or
That's
not.
Right.
Can
That's
probably
right.
give us a good sense, like you said, dispassionately of what we're dealing
we gotta
with.
We've got to have a starting place, man. You got to have a start on any game board. And that's the question is, with any of this, what's the starting point? Where do we start the research? And where do we go from there? Because without the starting point, without point of datum A, we don't know what fractal to start following. And it's a fractal.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for taking the time. I just heard applause, which means Lyle Blackburn is done speaking. Church is over, folks. We're getting ready to go in and watch the Small Town Monsters documentary. Make sure to stop on by and check that out. Daniel, let everybody know where they can go to keep up with your progress on the Aurora investigation from Aurora, Texas, and where they can go to follow everything from the Vortex, brother.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. You know, I try to do what I can to share a lot on social media. So, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter and Instagram. The Vortex is on YouTube, and I'm working, you know, pretty much most every day to get this publication done. There have been some delays and some tragedies, you know, another building fire, but, you know, I'm trying to make sense of that. I think it's important to add it as much as I don't like that happened.
It's part of the investigation and part of the story.
It's there, yeah. So I'm hoping to get that wrapped up here soon. And, you know, if anyone has any questions, I'm pretty accessible. I'd be glad to follow up. And, Chris, it's been an honor to be back. And
A pleasure.
Always looking forward to the next one.
You bet, man. Same here. And while you're online checking out everything from the Vortex, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com/videos. That is where you can find all of the videos from the Vortex. We embed all of our guests' YouTube channels there, so you have one nice, easy stop location to find it all. You don't have to go searching. CuriousRealm.com/videos will take you right to our guest video channel and let you see everything from Daniel Allen Jones and the Vortex. He has some great presentations on there from conferences, things like that. Also, some great presentations from other presenters on there. So stop on by, check that out. Check us out. CuriousRealm.com is the website. CuriousRealm.com/story is where you can go to fill out our contact form if you have had a brush with the paranormal, if you yourself have met a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or other cryptid, if you are a government whistleblower, stop on by, fill out our form, CuriousRealm.com/story. Share your story and evidence with us, and we will present it to our guests and try to get you some expert answers on your case. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. That is it for us from the 2023 Falk Monster Festival. Stay curious, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.